Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The man!
You gotta beat the man!
Whoa! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town!
And man, is it about time!
And this is not a mirage! This is real! This is here! This is now! This is the second coming!
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God!
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Everybody, and welcome to an old school hip hop night version of Online World of Wrestling Radio. 888-357-9876. Option one is the way to join us on the show tonight. You can also Skype Sir Rockin if you're tech savvy like that. You can also join us in our chat room, which is through the wildtalkradio.com site or owwradio.com. That was Houdini Freaks Come Out at Night. Yes, we're going to be doing old school hip hop. The native New Yorker in me kicked in. I was like, God, what do I want to do for music this week? And next thing you know, I was cleaning the house, and hey, hip-hop came on. We will be addressing tonight every single rumor that you have heard about Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, whatever his name says on his driver's license this week, and we'll address the rumors, including one that he was driving the limo last night on Monday Night Raw. We will have at 10:30 the producer of Viva La Lucha's first pay-per-view, which aired this Friday night. You can catch replays. Go to VivaLaLucha.com. Kevin Kleinrock will be here. He'll take questions on that project and a little project that he was involved in a couple years ago called Wrestling Society X. We are going to talk TNA. We've got Sarah and Ari Diagon joining us in a couple minutes from In This Very Ring, which is a blog that they run. Anthony Castellano of New York Newsday will be joining us, hopefully in the next few minutes. Mace from Wrestle Talk Radio is here with us tonight after he got subjected to watching Slammiversary. But unfortunately, we do have to open the show with some sad news if you're an old-school wrestling fan. If the name Aurelian Smith doesn't mean anything to you, then the name Grizzly Smith may. He passed away this past week at the age of 78. You may know his children, former WWE, WCW superstar Jake the Snake Roberts, Sam Houston, and former women's wrestler Rockin' Robin. Smith began wrestling in the late 50s in two tag team incarnations of a group called the Kentuckians. He was also a promoter in the Tri-State Territory in Louisiana. He also worked for Bill Watts' old Mid-South Wrestling. And if you watch WCW in the late 80s, chances are if there was an incident, a run-in, or a brawl of some kind, Grizzly was involved there, so we want to send our best wishes along to him and his family. We also want to take note, if you were with us last week and we had Bill Apter on, he was on talking about the Kayfabe Commentaries Ringside DVD series that was just put out with Terry Funk. We're proud to be a part of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. That is who owns this show. They inducted Terry Funk into the Online World of Wrestling Hall of Fame this past week. He does join several legends, including former NWA World Champion Ric Flair, Lou Thesz, and others, including Bret Owen Hart and Bruiser Brody. You can check that out. You can go to onlineworldofwrestling.com and then click on the Hall of Fame link. And in the next couple weeks, hopefully we'll be able to give away some DVDs from Kayfabe Commentaries, including the brand new U shoot with the former Apprentice star and ex of a certain masked man now, CM Punk. That would be Maria Kanellis, or Kanellis, however you want to pronounce it. Let's get everybody joined in here. First, I want to introduce them. They have their own blog. It is called inthisveryring.blogspot.com is how you can get to it. Want to welcome in Sarah and Ari Deigen to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys.
Thank you.
All right, and the man, the myth, and who braved the Nintendo press conference and unfortunately didn't make it to the PlayStation 1, the one and only Mace is joining us for this interesting evening of TNA wrestling.
Yes, I'm just getting caught up on it now, and E3, big video game thing, so I'm half dead to the world at the moment, but I'm still here.
Yeah, he's half focused on us. So he was last night when we were watching Monday Night Raw. He's like, this show's real. This main event stinks. I'm going to go watch this press conference. I was like, okay. If you're a fan of TNA wrestling in the chat room, yes, the rumors are true. Yes, we still actually have a world heavyweight champion named Rob Van. Ah, where'd my joint go? Oh, yeah, damn. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, he won. He took out Sting with a little help from Triple J. That's right. Jeff Jarrett made his return at Slammiversary, the 8th anniversary, and we're going to have an interactive question in a few minutes regarding that show, which basically means the chat room will be alive with it in a couple minutes. The other matches that happened included Jesse Neal getting probably the biggest win of his career, taking out his trainer, Brother Ray, or Bubba Ray Dudley, with a little debut from former ECW and WWE superstar Tommy Dreamer. No, that wasn't the surprise, kids. Dixie Carter's major announcement never actually happened. And if you're a fan of the Twitter, and you are a friend of, I think it's TNA Dixie with TNA and the D in caps, she put on there, to clarify, I will not be making an announcement about how TNA will change forever. You'll just see for yourself in the coming weeks. Now, their next pay-per-view is Victory Road, July 11th. Let me run the other matches real quick. We have another diva gone. And no, it's not the person we're going to talk about in a second. Nikki Rocks, or Roxy, as she was known in TNA, showed up for a pay-per-view and was basically told, congratulations, you're losing to Madison Rayne tonight, and you're done. Jay Lethal defeated AJ Styles. Matt Morgan defeated Hernandez via a DQ. No belts changed hands because the X Division champion, Douglas Williams, defeated D. Brian Kendrick. You also had Abyss take out Desmond Wolfe in a Monster's Ball match after Chelsea screwed Desmond Wolfe, and not in the way you want it. Kurt Angle moved up the top 10 list by taking out number 10, Frankie the Future Kazarian. And what quite possibly is Spug's favorite promo moment of the night, my tag team, Beer Money Incorporated, was taken out by Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson, who have dubbed themselves, I think I can legally say this on our show without Brad getting mad, the Enigmatic Assholes. Now, before we get input from our guests here, just want to run this by everybody. If you're wondering, well, why did Roxy get let go? According to Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer, he had heard earlier that there was a ton of backstage heat over a last-minute angle change that involved Nikki Rocks. So apparently she showed up and found out that she was done with the company. Roxy was in tears legitimately when the match was over, but they cut away so fast to show a video for the next match that it really didn't mean anything. The problem is, she was being used on a pay-per-appearance, so, you know, it wasn't like she had a multi-million dollar contract, which we'll mention in a minute, too. The other thing that happened if you're wondering, you know, yeah, knockout division, it's going great. No, it's not. Because they're not down one, they're down two. Jessica Kreis, also known as ODB, or if you saw her in her indie days before TNA, she used to be called One Dirty Bitch. Yeah, I just said that on the air. Apparently, asked for and was given her release by TNA Wrestling. Now, she had been vocal not only in her Twitter account, but her Facebook account as to how the knockout division had been booked. So, the first thing I want to get with everybody first is, are you surprised by either of these two revelations with the knockouts division, guys? I mean, we've pretty much on this show and on WrestleTalk Radio have declared the women's division dead unless you're one of the beautiful people. First to the folks in Canada, what are you guys thinking? Are you thinking, God, I'm glad WWE's got a women's division, or are you thinking women's wrestling is totally dead?
I was about to say, I'm thinking neither of them really have much of a women's division.
I assume we're joking there.
I mean, it's sad because I think TNA had a really strong women's division, but, you know, as they've, over the last year and a half, lost, you know, Gail Kim, lost Tara, lost ODB, Awesome Kong, Roxy, like, it's sad because they had so much potential and it's going downhill really quickly.
This isn't like a foreign topic to us, Mace, because we've been talking about this on the air, off the air for weeks. It's just like, if you remember the old WWE Tough Enough season one, Al Snow used to pick up a chair after everybody was released and put it up against the wall, signaling a tombstone. But that's kind of how this feels. I'm walking through the TNA women's graveyard, and it's like, what the heck happened here? Is this Russo doing this? Is this cost-cutting? What do you think, Mace?
Well, the big rumor going around since they got rid of Awesome Kong is it's more Bischoff Hogan doing. They're trying to bring things in line with WWE, and that means, of course, you know, women with the large appendages getting the spotlight, and those that can wrestle end up being forced to the background. I was going through yesterday, they only have 9 females left on the roster. And you can basically take a look at their roster now and pick who's going to be next. It's basically they're just going along and putting a bullet in each one of them as they're going down the firing line.
And this isn't something new, because when I was covering TNA in person and they brought Gail Kim in to be with Jeff Jarrett at America's Most Wanted, I remember seeing Gail a couple times and just going, so you're here for which purpose? Are you going to be joining, you know, what are you doing? And say, oh, I think I'm going to be doing the girls. I'm not 100% sure. They haven't booked anything for us. And they kept through waiting and waiting and waiting and wait. It was like, where's the women's wrestling? You know, Tracy Brooks was there, gone. April Hunter recently put a thing on her Facebook page saying, you know, they contacted me to come in, and for fans on the OWW Genesis board who didn't know who April Hunter is, you haven't been to an independent show in years, so you need to get out a little bit more. We'll get to the interactive question in a minute, Darby. Tell you what we're going to do. I need to take a quick technical break for a moment. Anthony Castellano is trying to join us on the show, and I need to call him real fast to let him know how to get with us. So we're going to take a real quick break, and we will be right back. If Rock wants to play something, we'll be right back.
Here we go. It's tricky to rock around, to rock around. That's right. On time is tricky. It's tricky, 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 tricky. It's tricky to rock around, to rock around. That's right. On time is tricky. Tricky, tricky. I met this little girlie. Her hair was kind of curly. Went to her house and bust her out. I had to leave real early. All they just say is please me, or spend some time and rock a rhyme. I said it's not that easy. It's tricky to rock around, that's right, on time is tricky.
How is it, babe?
It's tricky, tricky, tricky. It's tricky to rock around, rock around, that's right, on time is tricky. Tricky, tricky, tricky. In New York, the people talk and try to make us rhyme. They really hope.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The
the WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. The Hero Sense and Everything Wrestling. Head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Brett
Derry.
Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Pogi, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
So every day I get all these emails here at cindysin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, cindysin.com.
This is former ECW WWE superstar Kevin Thorne. And you're listening to Wild Talk Radio.
AAA 357-9876 option one here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Anthony Castellano and Newsday will be joining us a little later on when we talk WWE. He blogs for Newsday.com, a paper out of Long Island, New York. His blog is called The Steel Cage if you want to check him out while you're listening to us here. Sarah and Ari Diagon of Canadian fame are here with us, as well as Mace. And before our quick break, we were discussing TNA Wrestling's Weekend of Fun that was Slammiversary. I'm going to give the interactive question for the first part of our show to the fans. Now, as everyone knows listening to this show, I've covered TNA Wrestling from 2002, literally at the first show in Huntsville, Alabama, till now. And if you're a fan of the company, I want you to list at least two of all the matches that TNA Wrestling has ever had, whether it's a pay-per-view, Impact, if you happen to have gone to one of their live shows. Give us your favorite TNA match ever. I know I just gave you 8 years of matches to choose from. Mine's pretty easy. to come up with, because I was in attendance for it, and it was the first time the X Division main evented a 3-hour pay-per-view. It was Christopher Daniels, the Fallen Angel, currently unemployed by them, the phenomenal AJ Styles, and at that point he was undefeated, the Samoan Submission Machine, Samoa Joe. Now, ready to, I'll give everybody in the listening group that's sitting here with us a chance to figure one out. And we're going to actually, Sarah and Arya are going to step away for a moment. They've got to take a business call, so we'll give them a couple minutes to figure that out. While Mace tries to figure one out, and Rock and our producer can join in with this one as well. It looks like Darby in the room, this is Darby, wants to mention, I believe that was at the Asylum in Nashville, a triple ladder match with Loki, who currently can be seen as Caval in WWE television, versus AJ Styles, versus former X Division and World Tag Team Champion in TNA, Jerry Lynn. That's another interesting one. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think I mentioned it last week, you're a fan of the Asylum days of TNA before they moved everybody to Orlando. TNA Wrestling is going to be putting out a Best of the Asylum DVD, and that's going to be amazing just from all the matches that they did for the 2 years that they were in Nashville. While Mace tries to think of one, we're going to mention the biggest news out of this entire weekend. And all of it actually started this past Wednesday. Now, if you've been following the news, Scott Hall had been busted last month at a Florida nightclub establishment. Well, he didn't show up for his arraignment this past Wednesday. He had been charged, everybody can remember, with disorderly intoxication and resisting arrest. He actually entered a written plea of not guilty, even though the incident was caught on video and there were several witnesses against him. The judge ordered a pretrial conference for July 1st. Well, I'm guessing that may not have sat too well with the big bosses, because Pro Wrestling Insider is reporting, and I have not confirmed or denied this one yet, so we're just going to report it as saying it's their story, that TNA has fully released Scott Hall from his contract, and that's most likely the reason why the band did not have a match on the pay-per-view. They were supposed to have taken on Matt Morgan and a mystery partner, but the Hulkster decided, no, brother, we're going to make it. We're not going to put our world tag champs on pay-per-view. That would be smart. We're going to do Hernandez and Matt Morgan. Well, if you watch TNA Impact this coming week, we are spoiler-free here. And let's just put it this way, you want to, oh, David Meltzer is also confirming it, Rockin', okay, well, that's two people, I'll go with what they're saying. So, it's sad to say that once again, Scott Hall has been given a chance by a company and lost it. Now, if you don't remember, he came in at the Live Impact on January 4th when Sean Waltman made his re-debut. And, I mean, While people in the room are getting some stuff together, this is just sad to see, because if you look at Scott in the ring, Sarah, Ari, and Mace, especially since he's been back, and he's done some indie shows here in Florida with a group called I Believe in Wrestling, and he's done a couple other indie dates. Physically, he looked, well, to use the catchphrase, he looked phenomenal for a guy of his age. I think he's in his late 40s, early 50s. First to Mace, and then to Sarah and Ari, is this like the least biggest shock you've ever heard of in wrestling?
Scott Hall being fired for being drunk. That does not come as a surprise to me at all.
What about you guys, Sarah and Ari? You think, is this like, did you have the him in the pool making it to this point, or is this like, ah, damn, I needed one more week?
honestly, he probably already passed by guesses. When he first showed up, I mean, maybe I was missing something, but I mean, I thought he looked awful from the get-go. I mean, around the eyes, the puffiness.
But at the same time, he was doing some good things in the ring. And so I guess it was sort of a, I mean, on the one hand,
what he looked like versus what he was doing.
And I mean, and given his history, though, yeah, it's not surprising that he. I mean, we know he has a substance problem, a drinking problem.
And he didn't exactly look like he'd come back. You know, having spent, you know, a year sober, losing 50 pounds, and working the cardio.
So no, not a surprise, and maybe surprised he got this far. I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame, because I can honestly say I was a big fan of Scott's back in the Razor Ramon days, and of course you can't go wrong with this guy when he was sober in the NWO.
Mm-hmm.
He was money on the microphone, as they say sometimes in the locker rooms. So yeah, so we're spoiler free on this show by the boss, Brad Dykin. So need to definitely check out TNA Wrestling Impact this Thursday night on Spike. Mentioned it earlier when I was running the car down that the surprise itself has not been announced by Dixie Carter. First to Sarah and Ari and then to Mace. Your feelings on the debut of Tommy Dreamer. Do you think this is the beginning of that rumored ECW faction, or is this just going to be Tommy by himself?
We missed his debut, so we're going to have to pass on that one. The last couple of weeks, we've definitely been more WWE heavy. So
now, what was that rumor that you heard, though, about Paul Heyman?
I mean, yeah, the only thing I'd heard to that effect was I do know that in the last couple of weeks, there had been rumors that Dixie Carter and Paul Heyman had been speaking, but I didn't realize, I guess that goes to show how busy the last week or two has been. I didn't even realize that Tommy Dreamer had debuted, so,
I mean, it sounds good, but maybe we're just sort of grasping at straws because it sounds so good, because we've been saying for years, if only, you know, Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff could get over it.
Work together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
divide up duties appropriately, keep Paulie nowhere near the money.
So it sounds exciting, and I guess, yeah, we definitely, you know, given WWE's performance the last couple of weeks, it might be time to take a little break and switch over and see what TNA has to offer, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, don't worry. We'll bury WWE in a little while. Mace, we kind of mentioned this. We kind of mentioned this on Wrestle Talk Radio's post Slammiversary show. And if you're going to watch Fatal 4-Way this Sunday, after it, switch back over to WildTalkRadio.com and you can be a part of their event. You guys have brought up the Tommy Dreamer debut. Your overall feelings on Tommy even being here?
Well, his actual debut that... As I stated on the Wrestle Talk Radio last Sunday, it to me seemed very wasted. Coming out during a match between Brother Ray and Jesse Neal didn't really give any impact. It was like, whoa, here it is, Tommy Dreamer, yay! Oh, he's going backstage now? Okay, then. I would have loved to have seen him come out during the main event and start a storyline straight away, you know, get straight into it.
Mm-hmm.
But Tommy Dreamer's always been known as a great mind backstage. He's been a great motivator in the ECW locker room once upon a time. He's a very good worker who will always put himself out there for the fans. And this is one of the few acquisitions recently by TNA that could actually benefit them in the long run overall. So it's a good thing to have Tommy in there.
Well, that was something that we've actually talked about on the show as well, is this rumored ECW faction, which doesn't really sit too well with me, because as I mentioned Sunday, and I'll mention it to anyone, and I'm sorry if I'm offending you hardcore ECW fans, this just into the news desk, ECW died in 2002 and is never coming back. WWE tried and bombed royally with it. If you remember, Paul Heyman had full creative control over the first couple episodes of WWE's launch of ECW, and Vince said, nope, sorry, not. We're going to put this in the hands of the guys that used to work for Nickelodeon and used to work elsewhere, and that's how you got the Zombie, and you got all these other people that came on. I mean, you did have some good stuff in that ECW, and this isn't new. TNA, during the Asylum days, had Raven, had New Jack, had the Sandman. I think Balls Mahoney was in for a little while. So, it's dead. I'm sorry. There's not much we can do to resurrect that promotion. Someone mentioned in the room The interactive question right now is, in the history of TNA, name the best match that you've ever seen on DVD or pay-per-view. User streamer 31252 wanted to put in Jeff Jarrett versus Raven in their weekly build-up to their NWA World title shot. Now, they did that a couple times. They did it in Nashville, and then Raven won, I believe it was Slamversary 2005. Or six, one of those two, because I blend pay-per-views together, unfortunately, was King of the Mountain that Raven shocked everyone and walked out the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So there are rumors going around that Raven and Stevie Richards are there at the shows tonight. The weirdest rumors going around involving the Dixie Carter Twitter, she has claimed that she's got on board TNA, Spike TV, and all these people. The weirdest one I heard, guys, and I'll let it sink into you and all the chat room people, is they're going to cease pay-per-view operations and run everything on Spike TV doing Clash of the Champions-style events. I don't understand that, because unless you're going full-time on the road, TNA is a private company, unfortunately, folks, so they don't have to put their numbers out like WWE does, being a publicly traded company. So we don't know how many people are buying a TNA pay-per-view, but if you go pay-per-view bye-bye and just run TV and DVDs, you just cut your nose off and a couple arms and legs just to go, look at me over here. And she's claiming it's going to happen over the coming weeks. So, I mean, Sarah had already just mentioned the Paul Heyman rumor. Now, she apparently claimed that they had filmed commercials for this thing. They were doing photo shoots for this thing. I don't know. Does either one of you want to jump in? If you were running TNA and you made an announcement like this, wouldn't you? I mean, Tommy Dreamer's a great impact, but he's not a holy crap, there's so-and-so moment. A couple of people in our room are already saying that Dixie is an idiot and must be on some form of substance abuse problems. Well, that's been rumored for a long while in TNA, but there's no drug policy there. So if Sarah and Ari, if you guys are brought in and you guys were going to take the book, or you're given Terry Taylor's talent relations job, is the first acquisition you make Paul Heyman? Do you whip open a checkbook and say, what's it going to take you to get off of the Heyman Hustle website and get in here and run this thing? Or are you going in a different direction?
I mean, I think he would be a good get.
I think it's at the very least worth it, a trial. Maybe give him something short term, see what he can make of it.
I mean, I guess that's it. I wouldn't necessarily be giving him my bottom dollar. They've brought in big names like Jeff Hardy and Kurt Angle and other great wrestling minds like Jim Cornette, and still had some issues sort of getting that off the ground. So. I would sort of be thinking, baby steps at this point, and don't put all your eggs in one basket. But, if he was willing to come in for a reasonable price, I mean, yeah, I could see that being worthwhile.
I mean, I don't think it's, I agree with you that you shouldn't be trying to revive the old ECW in the sense of, let's bring back everybody who was in it. They're just getting older at this point. But bring back some of that creativity. I mean, he can't run a business, but Paulie has established he's got an excellent creative mind, making the most of talent. I mean, that's it's worth a try. Something different, another way to be different, steal some of the audience that's disaffected from WWE. Shouldn't be too hard.
Now, Mace and I have talked about this, and this has been talked about in other shows. Everybody knows that Paulie, if you watched the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD that WWE produced a few years ago, even Bubba Ray Dudley said, Paul Heyman is an absolute genius. Just don't put a checkbook in front of him. I can't really see that happening, Mace. I can't see Bob and Dixie Carter and Surge and all of them going, yeah, sure, Paul, you already managed to kill your company, but yeah, come on in and use our checkbook.
Yeah, well, I would never let Paul Heyman near a checkbook ever again, I'd definitely keep a rolled up newspaper to bop him on the nose with if he even tries to go close to it. But at the same time, as much as TNA would have some sort of improvement with Paul Heyman there in creative, there are a lot of guys in there now, especially with the acquisition of Tommy Dreamer. As I mentioned before, the guy was a road agent for WWE for quite a bit. You've also got Raven, who is one of the most brilliant minds in the business, full stop. You know, you've got Kevin Nash, who, yeah, okay, his booking in WCW sucked, but still, he knows the business. They've got Al Snow back there. They've got a wealth of knowledge from all these guys who have been in the business for 20-plus years apiece. You know, so as much as Heyman would be a great idea, why not grab these guys and go, okay, you know, we might not be using you on air at the moment, but sit down with us, boys, give us ideas, give us ways to turn this company around, and I could almost guarantee those guys would start booking your next 12 months and actually have something interesting to put in. You know, that's one of the worst things about wrestling is when you have guys with knowledge, just because they're not on the payroll as a creative person, you don't use them as creative. Well, that's stupid. The guys who should be booking are guys who have had time in the ring, who have had time backstage. You know, you got guys with experience in the company. Use them, for God's sake.
Yeah, and that was the argument back in the old WCW, and I know we're talking about dead promotions. I like to present that casket over here that Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo helped put there, also AOL Time Warner, was after Bill Watts had come in and went crazy in the mid or the early 90s, WCW flat out said, never, ever, and they slammed it on the desk, the fist thing, never will a wrestling person run companies, we're in charge, da-da-da-da-da. And as you mentioned, I mean, the Paul Heyman thing kind of works for the fact that as if you've been watching the internet lately and reading the newsletters such as Meltzer's or Wade Keller or even our site at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, Vince Russo has once again claimed to be burnt out. So he's actually been saying, I want to be the executive producer, kind of, I guess, along the lines of how Dusty Rhodes was the executive producer of the WCW / Jim Crockett promotion stuff and Kevin Dunn when of WWE fame. So that kind of leaves the opening for Paul Heyman to come in. But before we go to break, we'll take it around the table real quick. You know, Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff, people said, oh, these two will never get along. Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff have had a history with each other going back to when Paul was in WCW and then jumped and left the company. So first to Ari and Sarah and then to Mace, would this be like the biggest lethal toxic mix of Bischoff and Russo and Russo and Heyman involved? Or do you think this is the formula and let it run and we'll see what happens?
I would say see what happens. I think it definitely has a chance of being kind of lethal.
Especially
and
Russo and Heyman. I mean, I could see Heyman and Bischoff, you know, just, okay, divide up the duties and, you know, we can shake and be all business. I mean...
It could definitely get toxic.
Clash of creative visions
it
there.
It could definitely get toxic, but at this point, I mean, why not try something different? You know, throw some crap at the wall, see if it works, and, you know, if it doesn't, they don't have much to lose. It's at least worth a shot.
All right, Mace, if you're sitting there, are you going, yes, I want Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff in the same room creatively, or are you sitting there going, screw that, let Ed Ferrara and Scott Conway, who are doing the current writing with a little bit of input from Jeff Jarrett, do you just want to let it stay this current route, or are you wanting to reinvent them again as they tried to do this past January?
I wouldn't say so much reinvent as turn around and say, okay, here's our outline for the next 6-plus months. Have a look at it, see where we can improve it. I could definitely see Bischoff and Heyman sitting down and going, okay, now that we have to work together, let's get all our stuff out in the open, let's get past it, let's do what's right for business. Especially Bischoff, because he's been more about business than booking, whereas Heyman's the other way around. He's more about booking than business. you know, getting those two minds together would actually improve the product. You throw Vince Russo into the mix, and then there's the catalyst for a big kaboom of cartoon-like proportions. But yeah, if Russo wants to take his time off, what better time to bring Heyman in?
All right, on that note, we're going to take our second break of the evening. Don't go anywhere, because Anthony Castellano with Newsday will be joining us. We'll have a second interactive question that will pertain to the most popular man on Twitter and WWE News. That's right. After the break, we're going to get right into the Bryan Danielson situation. Kevin Kleinrock will be joining us at the 10:30 point of our event. 888-357-9876 is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio on Old School Hip Hop Music Night. Don't forget, you can check out Sarah and Ari's blog. Go ahead and mention how they can find your information real quick, guys.
Yeah, sure. You can find our blog at inthisveryring.blogspot.com.
All right, we will be back in a couple moments here on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
And I'll be there in a jiffy. Don't be picky, just be happy with this quickie. From what you learn, you can't time it down, baby doll. Check it out, I get around. What you mean you don't know? Check it, I get around. The underground just don't stop for hoes. I get around. Still down with the underground clowns. Around they go, I get around. Hey yo, son, let them hoes know.
Now you can tell from my everyday fits, I ain't rich, so cease and desist with them tricks. I'm just another black man caught up in the mix, trying to make a dollar out of it.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis, it's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey Omega, did you hear that OWW Radio has a new host?
A new host? Really?
Oh, yes and no. He's the old host, but he's now the new host. So, on behalf of the Wild Talk Radio Network, I would like to introduce the new host of OWW Radio, Alan Wojnarowski.
No, Mace, you have it wrong. It's Alan Wojnarowski.
Are you sure? I thought it was Alan Wojnarowski.
The name is Alan Wojcik. How many times do I have to spell it out for you people? As these guys are trying to tell you, I'm the host of Online World of Wrestling Radio, which airs on the Wild Talk Radio Network every Tuesday night, around 9-ish, I guess, Eastern Time, remember, we're on Eastern Time, till basically me and whoever's joining me runs out of stuff to say. It's a brand new era in Online World of Wrestling Radio, where your opinion actually matters.
As the owner of Wild Talk Radio, I'd like to welcome Alan Wojcik. Who the fuck is Internet Davis?
The name is Wojcik.
To the Wild Talk Radio Network.
You know my name.
Hey everyone, it's Tim Stein here to tell you about a brand new podcast debuting soon, exclusively on the Wild Talk Radio Network. The History Of will take you on a fantastic journey as we look at some of the most famous rock groups, funny people, and actors and actresses of all time. Utilizing the video abilities of Ustream as well as the lossless stereo sound of internet audio, The History Of will bring a totally new experience to Wild Talk Radio. So make sure that you join me, your host, Tim Stein, as we take a look at the history of some of your most favorite people ever. Make sure to keep a lookout for this brand new webcast coming soon, only to Wild Talk Radio.
This is Christy
Annie,
TNA Knockout.
I'm out here because I have something very important that I need to say.
And you're listening to Wild Talk Radio Network. Well, it's a do to say about it. They
say it's new, but I have right about now, you're about to be possessed by the sounds of MC Raw Face and DJ Easy Rock.
Triple A 357-9976 option one. Damn, I hate talking over that song. If you're going, who the hell is that? That's Raw Bass and Easy Rock of New York, and I picked them because joining us now on Online World of Wrestling Radio is a gentleman who writes for my hometown newspaper. That's right, yes, I'm not a Floridian. I'm a born and raised New Yorker, Long Islander. He writes for Newsday. He has a blog as a part of their website called The Steel Cage. We want to welcome Anthony Castellano to Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
We're doing pretty good. We've had tons of fun talking WWE's rival, TNA Wrestling, and now we're going to get to the chat that everybody has been talking about since late Friday night. And I'm going to bore people for a minute, so I apologize, just so we catch everybody up on what the heck has gone on here. There's been on tons and tons and tons of news sites, so we'll run this as fast as we can. If you've already seen it, yes, Bryan Danielson, formerly known in WWE NXT as Daniel Bryan, was given the Future Endeavor label last Friday night. Now, tons of rumors have gone around, guys, that it's a work since his WWE Twitter account changed names and he had posted a cryptic message saying the winds of change are stirring. Now, since then, even up till today, there's been stories that basically involving the Justin Roberts situation, where if you watched Monday Night Raw during the NXT invasion, you saw ring announcer Justin Roberts choked out with his own tie. And as everybody knows, none of the ringside people knew that was coming. So depending on what story you buy, guys, it was either an NBC television executive, a Mattel Toys executive that apparently was highly offended by the NXT storyline, including Danielson choking out Justin Roberts. Another was WWE doing the release to block the media event that TNA was doing. Now, of course, everybody was possibly watching the pay-per-view Sunday going, yeah, but he's the surprise. Because even though they made the storyline that all the NXT guys are rookies, Bryan Danielson and the other seven are under WWE developmental contracts, which basically means they're Fed employees. They may not be making the money that John Cena, The Undertaker are making, but they're on salary. So Bryan Danielson's 90-day clock, his non-compete clause clock, started Friday night. which means, I mean, there's also been a story going around that this is a rehash of the Matt Hardy firing involving his romance with Amy Dumas and Edge and all of that stuff. Now, just when you thought it got weirder, let's flash back. Florida Championship Wrestling is based down here, obviously, in Tampa, Florida. This past Wednesday, before Bryan Danielson was fired, they held a house show on the east coast of the state in Melbourne, Florida. They were here in Miami for Monday Night Raw and then did SmackDown and the debut of NXT here in Tampa. They went to Melbourne and Christian appeared, called out Heath Slater, who was his rookie, and said, oh, I want to know what's going on. You know, you did this and that and the other thing. Slater came out, turned Christian so he couldn't see. Bryan Danielson knocks him silly. And out of nowhere, here comes The Miz to save Christian. And it set up a tag team match that was interrupted by the NXT rookies, who then laid everybody out. So from that point Wednesday till Friday is when the firing went down. Now, we're not the only ones that have been talking about this. WWE champion John Cena on his Twitter account got involved, and he wrote a big thing here. But to paraphrase it, he just said, I'm very upset to hear about the release of Bryan Danielson. Social networks were formed so people have a voice and an opinion. I know you all have your own theories and whatnot. I respect that. I never asked any of you to feel a certain way about me. But Bryan left a lasting impression on the WWE universe in a very short amount of time. And although it came at my expense, I agree with the majority of you who are caught off guard by this choice. Now, Bryan Danielson actually put something up a couple days ago that said, biding my time, waiting for the right moment to speak. Now, there's also a gentleman, I kid you not, his name is Warwick Evans. He has a petition online to get him reinstated to WWE. You can look that up. So we'll go first to Anthony on this, and the interactive question we'll get to in a second for the second session of this show. First to Anthony on this, your initial reaction when you heard what went down, this whole, the whole firing and then the rumors that have started?
Well, initially, I also thought that it was just all a work, because he's by far the most talented and over of the next rookies, which, like you said, they aren't real rookies, but he was the most talented and he was the most over. So I initially thought it was a work. I originally posted in the blog, you know, I think it's a work. And then the WWE, you know, they put the statement on the website, and usually they don't fool around with that, the whole future endeavors thing. So that's when I started to realize, okay, maybe it's not a work. But honestly, he'll be back. Jim Ross in his blog also said he thinks he will be back. I've been reading a lot that there's a lot of sympathy within the WWE for Bryan Danielson. A lot of people are saying that he's going to be back, and I honestly think it would... WWE doesn't owe him anything. I mean, they don't owe anybody anything in this case, but they owe it to give this kid a second shot, because obviously he didn't know what the rules were about, you know, doing something like this. You know, he's only been in the WWE a few months. He will be back. I don't think you're going to see him anywhere else, I'll be honest with you, once his 90 days are up, because he shows up on, if he showed up on TNA, he's not going back to WWE right away. He shows up maybe in Ring of Honor. He could still come back to the WWE before the year is out. But he'll be back in the WWE before people could even, you know, before he's a distant memory. He'll be back.
Right. And Anthony leads us to our second interactive question of the night to the folks that are in the WildTalkRadio.com chat room. 90 days from this past Friday, we're all possibly sitting here on the air. We may not. Where's Bryan Danielson? Is Bryan Danielson back in WWE television? Does he make his TNA debut? Or does he say, screw TNA and WWE, I'm sticking with Ring of Honor, or going back to Evolve and Dragon Gate USA, which, for fans to remember, Evolve was originally set to be the built around Bryan Danielson before they went with Davey Richards, which obviously now has been a mistake. We'll let the chat room mull that over for a minute. We'll go to our other contributors visiting us tonight. Sarah and Ari, as fans and writers, your initial reaction to Bryan Danielson being released, and I'll put it to you also, 90 days from now, are we seeing Bryan Danielson on WWE, TNA, or is he going back to being the god of the indie scene?
Well, if we're starting on the premise that the release was legit, mm-hmm. I think 90 days is, I mean, almost anything can happen, and I wouldn't want to make a prediction, because that's plenty of time for WWE to realize they've made a mistake. That's plenty of time for TNA to swoop in and come in with a good offer. Mm-hmm. I mean, to not sit on the fence and to make a prediction, I'll say he's back with the WWE because it is either a work or they will have gotten the backlash and gotten the point by then. So I'll say he's with the WWE.
I'm usually willing to go out on a limb, predict something anyways. I'd say, I mean, I think eventually he'll be back with the WWE, but not yet. This strikes me as, I mean, they weren't, you know, thrilled to, I mean, they weren't thrilled to have him. I mean, they liked the talent, they liked the popularity, they didn't like that they didn't make him. He's not their classic type of wrestler. It takes a while to for them to warm up to that, and especially when then he, you know, makes a mistake. I'm sure he'll be back because people have made, you know, far worse mistakes than, you know, doing something wrong on air, than, like, not showing up, you know, to be on air, and still gotten back with the WWE. It seems like almost anyone can eventually get back into Vince McMahon's good graces. But I suspect he'll be doing some time away. TNA or the Indies, neither would shock me. I'll guess the Indies, but it wouldn't shock me since TNA's habit seems to be try to acquire everyone. So,
888-357-9876 is the option one choice tonight. It is brought to you by one of the new sponsors of the Wild Talk Radio Network, AJKHost.com. Also brought to you by UNDA, UNDA GroundRadio.com. This is Online World of Wrestling Radio at the top of the hour. Joined here by Anthony Castellano of the Steel Cage, which is a blog by Newsday, one of the biggest newspapers in the New York area. Sarah and Ari Dian are joining us also from In This Very Ring, their blog online. Mace from Wrestle Talk Radio will be joining us in a second. And, of course, I'm Alan Wojcik. The topic right now is, in 90 days, where is Bryan Danielson? In our chat room, US Ustreamer 63452. Says the WWE. Ustream 31252 is saying that Bryan Danielson will go and work in Japan, where he has been for on and off for the last couple of years. You guys broached this topic on Sunday, Mace. I'll put it to you, 90 days from this past Friday, is Bryan Danielson a WWE employee, TNA, or Ring of Honor?
The money everybody's putting on at the moment is WWE, and that's only because 99% of it is just work.
Sorry, my microphone was moved. Personally, I would turn around if I was Dixie Carter and start going, you know what, work or not, legally you are gone from that company. Here's some extra money. Would you like to come work for us and just give a gigantic screw you to the WWE? But that would be me as sort of a semi-TNA Marx idea. But, yeah, I think the suggestion of Japan would probably be the best one for him. But then again, I don't think Japan counts in his 90-day.
Yeah, I think the way... The way 90-day appearances work, if you remember back to, I'm gonna put my two cents in here real fast. This kind of smells of Matt Hardy, circa, I think it was 2005 or 6, that Jeff Hardy was working for TNA, and of course we had the whole Amy Dumas, Adam Copeland love triangle, and instead of firing the guy whose girlfriend you were cheating with, you fired the guy whose girlfriend got cheated on. and made the guy world champ. And then, of course, he went and worked some Ring of Honor dates and had, and we had Lenny Leonard on here who had called some of those matches, including, I think he wrestled Roderick Strong and a couple other people. And just at May 89, 90, boom, Matt Hardy re-debuts and kills Edge backstage and then goes to the ring and kills Edge. And everybody's like, wow, swerve of all swerves. And that's the first thing that I mentioned to everyone that I talked to since then, whether it be the people on Wrestle Talk Radio, people on my Facebook page, the Online World of Wrestling Facebook page, is this just, even though they're a publicly traded company and they have brand new, super powerful executives, male or female, that come from outside of the wrestling bubble, this just oozes. It oozes it. Someone in our room, Sick Ninja, saying it was 2005 because he went to a show before his debut in ROH. And I would love to say that this is work because, as we're going to talk about in a second, let's get this right, folks. Pay-per-view, John Cena nearly runs, Dave Bautista nearly runs John Cena over with a car. That's okay. This past Monday night on Raw, the NXT rookies taking Raw general manager Bret Hart, throwing him in the back of a limo, and then yelling, "Go Danny," which I didn't know until our producer Sir Rockin mentioned it, and then smashing him into car after car after car. That's okay. But taking a tie to a ring announcer, not okay. And I think someone on the Wrestle Talk Radio show mentioned it, and may have mentioned it on the OWW Genesis board, which if you're not a member of already, you need to be a member of. During that whole NXT invasion last Monday, guys, and anyone can jump in here with their opinion, while the whole Justin Roberts thing was going on outside, and I had to go to the video to figure this one out, Heath Slater's in the ring choking out John Cena with one of the ropes, which, if you've never been near a WWE ring, guys, that's, well, real rope. It's not a steel cable inserted. It's real rope with tape wrapped around it. I've seen them at the FCW shows, and some of the WWE rings, maybe the old WCW cable thing. So first to Anthony here, which is worse? Is what the NXT guys did this past week to Bret Hart worse than what Bryan Danielson did to defenseless ring announcer Justin Roberts?
It's one of those really like dumb things. It's like, you know, you would say yes, but you expect the WWE to take a guy and throw him around a car and do something like that. What I think it is if this is true, if Bryan Danielson is really gone from the WWE, the only reason why he is gone is because someone with high power, not affiliated with the WWE, I don't think it is, either from Linda McMahon's Senate campaign, Mattel, maybe an executive from the USA Network, they placed a call to the WWE, obviously right to Vince McMahon, and said that is something's wrong with that, with what Bryan Danielson did. Again, to all of us who've watched wrestling, what Bryan Danielson did is no different than, you know, almost like a blatant choke, you know what I'm saying, that we see any wrestler do. But the problem is that it was public pressure from outside the company, because if it's inside the company, nobody has more power than Vince McMahon in that company. So it's someone from outside the company putting pressure on McMahon. And like you said, Bryan Danielson did not get fired right after Raw. It was a couple of days. So it took time to get to McMahon. It took time for him to make a decision. I honestly do think it is true. I think it will all, I mean, it's great for us to talk about on the web and in our blogs and whatnot, but I don't think it's as big of a deal because I think it's just one of those things. They put pressure on him. The WWE acted on it, had to get rid of him, but we'll have him back, you know, by year's end. But go back to your original question. Yes, it's, you know, what they did to Bret Hart, yes. But you know what? People expect that when they see the WWE. They expect the guy to get slammed around. They expect, you know, the outrageous. It's the little thing, choking someone with a tie, that sets someone outside of the company way off. They've never seen that.
888-357-9976. Option 1 is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. You can also Skype Sir Rockin'. In the 10:30 block of the show, Kevin Klein Rock of Viva La Lucha pay-per-view background will be joining us. And at that point, we'll possibly let our other guests go unless they want to stick around for that. The storyline was set up to go, it almost felt like this past Monday when Bret Hart came out and fired Wade Barrett and told everybody else get lost. Mason Rock and I were sitting there going, all right, see that garbage can? There's the angle for three, swish, all right. And then you basically, this almost reeks if you're a fan of the old WCW days, and I'm 35, so I'm old enough to remember the WCW-NWO war when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash debuted in 96, and then at the Great American Bash, powerbomb heard around the world of Eric Bischoff getting dumped. To Sarah and Ari, is this NXT angle here to stay, or do you think that this is a flash in the pan type thing that WWE just said, this is a three-hour throwaway show, let's put out a test balloon and see if this will float?
I think that they'll stick with it for a while just because it's sort of tried and true, the, like, young guys versus, you know, veterans kind of angle, the invasion kind of angle.
And we haven't had one of these in a little while.
I mean, I would be cautious about letting it go on too long, and I would be cautious about having the veterans, like, you know, really decisively win in the end, because that's where these usually fall down, is the guys who are supposed to go over with the angle often don't in the end. But I mean, you know, if they can pull it off, I think they'll run with it. Their tendency is to run almost too long with mm-hmm. stuff until it becomes less than interesting. So
you asked the question of, is this going to go on for a while, or was this just a trial balloon? I mean, honestly, I think probably both.
A trial balloon that worked and will stick around for a while.
Yeah, I mean they set it up. I mean, you know, quasi cliffhanger ending. You know, whatever we think of, you know, was that violence any worse than, you know, Bryan Danielson's violence? It was an ending that set up, at least a few more weeks of, you know, storyline. It's, I found it entertaining, and, it was certainly, I think, almost everyone agrees, the best part of the three-hour Raw a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had on, we had Jim Barcelona of the Miami Herald on last week, and he was actually in attendance at the event, and he said that the arena was kind of reminiscent to that initial Bash at the Beach that Hulk Hogan hit the ring and destroyed Randy Savage, Sting, and Luger. The audience was, there's the Cena haters that were just like, yeah, Cena's getting his butt kicked. What the hell? They're still kicking his butt. Now they're beating on the King and Matt Stryker and that timekeeper guy who we don't even know his name. So, I mean, Mace, we talked about NXT's thing last week, and if you watched this past week's NXT, which thanks to the power of the DVR, I was able to do, and the NXT Season 2 guys literally got their butts kicked at the end of the show. So is this eventually, Mace, going to be an NXT Season 1 versus Season 2 thing, or are you staying with the idea of let's do this NXT versus WWE thing at least till SummerSlam when Triple H comes back from injury again and says, I am Triple H, you all suck, and it's back to me being in charge? And I know if Spug's listening, I'm sorry, I've asked your guy.
Okay. Well, the whole beatdown of the Season 2 guys, I reckon, will accentuate the current NXT invasion angle, because I believe this is the season that's going to be the short one due to the SmackDown moving the Sci-Fi deal, which they could use this as an excuse for the NXT Season 2 guy, join up with the NXT Season 1, so it's a massive group, and it takes both Raw and SmackDown, otherwise known as Triple H and John Cena, to beat them all. But, yeah, this is very reminiscent of the NWO days, and I still reckon it was Bryan Danielson driving the Hummer. No, I mean limo. Sorry. Very confusion between the WCW angles and the WWE angle.
Yeah, and that was like something today, Mace Rock hits me about 12:30 in the afternoon in between breaks of my medical billing and coding classes, and he says, you got to see this picture. I'm like, oh, God, what the hell is he sending me? And if you want to post the link to it in the chat room, Rock, it's a blow-up of the TV with apparently a shot of the limo and the driver, and immediately this thing went around the world going, holy crap, that's Brian Danielson driving the car. I'm like, how the heck can you see it? That's Brian Danielson, man. I mean, you see a hood and you see a face and you're like, what the heck? I don't know where it is. And if you want to post that in the Russell Talk Radio chat room for them as well, that way they can see it, or the Wild Talk Radio Network chat room, it's just like the Zapruder film, back and to the left, back and to the left. And the weirdest part, we'll go to Anthony and Asaria, and also to our guests from Canada. And, oh, that's something from Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net, which we'll get to in a second, because we're trying to get him as one of our regular contributors as well. And up until last night, we've talked about it on this show in our previous Slammiversary. This upcoming WWE pay-per-view, up until this past Monday, had two matches announced, which were the two world title matches, Edge versus Cena versus Sheamus versus Orton, and then Rey versus Punk versus Swagger versus Big Show. They have added a couple matches since then. First to Anthony and then to Sarah and Ari. Does this surprise you that WWE has dragged their heels so much in announcing the rest of these matches? Because the other ones that they have announced include a brand new U.S. champ. If you watched Raw last night, The Miz has got the belt back. He's going to have to defend immediately against R-Truth. You've also got Divas champion Eve Torres defending against Gail Kim and Maryse and Alicia Fox. Anthony, you've covered WWE for years. Is this just like piss poor booking by them, or is this them trying to get their fans involved and saying, who do you guys want to see in this pay-per-view?
Obviously, I think it's just that there's such a huge disparity between the main event scene and the mid-card scene. I honestly feel bad for the people in Long Island who bought tickets to the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view months ago, because, you know, and this is something that I'm going to probably go into more on the blog this week, since the pay-per-view's in our backyard, is that there's not a lot of build for the two main events, but that seems like that's all they focused on. Before last night, there was only those two matches booked, and then, you know, they threw the Divas title, match in on it, fine, whatever, and you have to get the Miz on the card, and they probably will get Drew McIntyre on the card, we'll see this Friday, but I just think they did not think when they put this card together, and I think a lot of it has to do, they got hit with a lot of injuries, you know, Undertaker's off SmackDown, Randy Orton's shoulder, I mean, we saw last night on Raw, I mean, he was barely in the match, and he didn't even have his wrist pads on or his elbow pads. I mean, he was, like, non-existent in that match at all. It's just, they just, I don't know what they did, but it's not very good booking on their part, and I think a lot has to do with injuries, and that there's such a huge disparity between the main event scene and the mid-card scene, and they have given no love to the tag team division when they have pretty decent tag teams, especially on Raw with the Usos and the Hart Dynasty, and they've done nothing with it. They've just worried about the two main titles, which I understand, but you have to fill out the rest of a pay-per-view, which is usually 2.5 hours. And these are just thrown together matches. There's no history. You know, there's not a lot of history. I mean, like, yeah, The Miz and R-Truth have gone at it, but they don't have, like, a real, true feud for, like, the past 3 weeks that makes you, you know, makes it a compelling match to watch this Sunday.
Now, as he mentioned, it is in our backyard, me being a former Long Islander, at the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum, home of your four-time Stanley Cup champion New York Islanders, which I believe is the oldest arena in the NHL now. I'm not allowed to talk hockey because my boss Tim Stein on here will get mad and go, no hockey talk, you'll be on our show soon. At least they're not false advertising by putting Hulk Hogan on a poster at the New York Cyclone show going, come out to see TNA! Hulk Hogan won't be here, but he sure looks real good on a poster. have they been doing hard-hitting advertising on the Long Island radio stations in the media at all, or are they just relying on Raw and SmackDown to promote this event in New York?
You know, I really haven't seen a lot of it on Long Island. I don't live in Long Island. I just work there. I'm a little more in the New York City area. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up because I actually interviewed John Cena 2 weeks ago. He was doing something for NASCAR, and I asked him, you know, does it hurt a little? When you perform in Long Island, the shadow of New York City, I mean, is it kind of a little disheartening? I mean, you're not at the Garden, you're not in Midtown Manhattan. And he brought it up, and he's like, no, you know, we love that area. The Northeast area is the best, but there's a huge difference between Long Island and, you know, wrestling in the Garden. And I've been to both arenas. I've seen the shows. I mean, there is a difference. The advertising hasn't been huge for Fatal 4-Way, at least in this neck of the woods. I haven't heard it much on the radio, a little bit here and there. Just we've been hyping it up a little bit on the blog, and I actually think the paper is ordering Alfonso Castillo, who also writes in the blog. He's going to be writing a story for it, which will go in the paper, which is kind of a big deal. But not a lot of promotion at all. I mean, and why really? I mean, this pay-per-view is lackluster at best.
888-357-9876, option one is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, and Anthony Castellano of the Steel Cage, a blog that can be reached through newsday.com. Mace of Wrestle Talk Radio is here as well, and also Sarah Ari Daigan of In This Very Ring is their blog. I want to throw it to you guys for a second and propose the same question I just put to Anthony. We've only got a couple announcement matches here. The two world titles have been set, the Divas Championship set, the U.S. Champ set. But you don't have a match for Kofi Kingston. You don't have a match for the Hart Dynasty. Lay Cool is sitting over on SmackDown with Caval saying, "You're so cute and cuddly, hold our belts." Is this just, like Anthony said, They're betting on the two world title matches to bring butts to the pay-per-view window? Or is this just total piss-poor booking at, oh, Fatal 4? Wait, what, you mean we actually have to book this thing?
Again, leaning entirely on the two title matches could be piss-poor booking. I think this is not unusual for WWE.
I was going to say, to steal Michael Cole's line, vintage WWE.
Also, in this particular case, they're probably also recovering. But, I mean, they've gotten only 3 or 4 weeks between any two given pay-per-views, and they completely flushed one of them on the 3-hour Viewer's Choice Creptacular. So, I mean, it's, oh, you know, there's 3 hours gone, and we didn't really, you know, do anything to, you know, advance storylines. Not that you can't have good TV in itself, that, you know, and leave selling the next pay-per-view for another week, but I guess that's the thing. If you're going to have lousy TV, you should at least maybe set up a few more matches so there's some payoff.
So in short, in one sentence, it's lousy booking.
Yeah.
And that just surprises us, because we mentioned last week with Jim Barcelone, we're used to TNA doing this, where they're going, Russo, put down the book that you're writing and book a pay-per-view, dude. We don't have anything booked. You've got Stephanie McMahon-Levesque over here, Dusty Rhodes when he's not here at FCW. And it's just really weird stuff. In case you're wondering about the NXT and the FCW guys that are on TV now, yes, they're also WWE developmental people. And after this show on Bright House Network Sports here in Florida, you can find FCW. I don't know if you can find them on other cable systems yet or not, but they're about 2-3 weeks behind in the TV, so much so that the Usos are still the FCW champions. Michael McGillicuddy is called Joe Henning still. And of all the people I never expected to do TV with Byron Saxton, who was doing the ECW stuff, Wade Barrett does commentary on the FCW TV stuff. I was very surprised. Something that may surprise you is that at the TV tapings this past Thursday, this isn't nationwide, so I can do spoilers here. It got a little confusing to some friends of mine that were at the tapings. Some of the people on the OWW Genesis board here in Florida go. NXT rookie Justin Gabriel wrestled and worked as a babyface, not wearing the Super N armband. However, David Otunga wrestled on the same show, and he was wearing the armband, so who knows what's going to go on there. 888-357-9976, option one is the way to join us here. As mentioned, the NXT rookies got, season two rookies, got the snot beat out of them. Only Titus O'Neil, Eli Cottonwood, Husky Harris, and Percy Watson got to wrestle on this past week's show. Did Mace happen to catch the NXT, or am I about to stick my foot in my mouth and tell him, hey, Mace, you want to ask her an NXT question?
Yeah, how does your foot taste, Alan?
Pretty good. Well, I'll throw it to Anthony and Nasser and Ari. Forget Caval for a second, because he's the most established of everyone, being a former Ring of Honor star and TNA star. Is there someone on this roster, refers to Anthony and then Nasser and Ari, on this show that you're sitting there going, I can't wait to see that guy away from NXT? Is there one of them there, or is it two of them? Who do you pick?
If I had to pick just a few, I like Alex Riley. I like him for one reason, because he teams with The Miz, and I think anything with The Miz is a good thing. I think The Miz could really bring whatever the rookie he's dealing with, I think he could bring the best out of him. I think he's not bad. Titus O'Neil, for some reason I like his look, but in one show I really couldn't make a definitive judgment call on any of these guys. I mean, we have to just kind of wait and see. I think it's too early. I think that it's promising. But I'm a little worried about the shortened season with them going to, they're going to make the jump eventually. But I think it's going to be okay. I just don't know exactly which one at this moment.
Just from looking at the roster, Sarah and Ari, is there anyone that Loki? Everybody knows who Loki is, and everybody knows that Michael McGillicuddy is the son of the late Curt Hennig and grandson of Larry the Axe. And Husky Harris is Mike Rotunda's son and Barry Windham's nephew and Blackjack Mulligan's grandson. And when I first saw him debut, I'm looking, going, wow, Barry Windham's kid's on TV. And then they go, no, that's Mike Rotunda's kid. And I was like, what? So, I mean, to Sarah and Ari, is there someone that you're hoping that they, I mean, it seems like they may focus strictly on Caval. I know it hasn't aired in Canada yet, because of their deal with whoever it's on in Canada with. I don't know if they're on the CBC score. Or FightNet. They're on the Score. Is that where they are?
Yeah, that's scary. You've got to get, like, the third or fourth cable package up to even get it.
Yeah. So, obviously, like you say, the three names that sort of stand out are Caval and Joe Hennig and Wyndham Rotunda. And I think of those three, I mean, I guess it sort of depends if they want to go with the obvious, with the people they've been pushing, or if they actually want to break the glass ceiling a little bit and go with one of the other guys who, maybe doesn't so much need a push. I think it's funny to watch Caval, who has such a great reputation from TNA and from the independents, working with Lay Cool. I think, because they're so silly and sort of the comic relief, and he is so very serious. I've been, enjoying at least seeing that, on SmackDown and whatnot.
A lot of wrestlers can stand to take themselves less seriously.
But, I think it definitely, those are the three that would be obvious to push, but they're also the three who would need the win the least. So, I'm not in booking's head on that score.
And for fans that aren't aware of it, if you don't, like I said, the majority of the people that are listening to our show right now, there may be some that listen to us on clickwrestle.com, or they can download this, or the iTunes store at apple.com. In FCW, before they were both brought up, Darren Young of Season 1 and Percy Watson of Season 2 were a tag team called the South Beach Boys. So that could be something to see later on. At this point, we're going to take our next scheduled commercial break, and we're going to We're going to let Anthony go ahead and go. Before we go again, Anthony, give everybody the exact information on how to get to your blog on Newsday.
It's really simple. Just newsday.com/steelcage.
All right. And we thank you for joining us tonight here. Don't hang up just yet. Sarah and Ari are also going to step aside for our guests to come on with. Go ahead and tell everybody how to get to where your site is. And, yes, we're going to let you go ahead and pack for your wonderful trip to Walt Disney World. Shame you missed Slammiversary by a week. Tell them how to get to your site.
We blog at inthisveryring.blogspot.com. We have our own podcast over there as well that we try to get
usually
up Thursday night,
but
it's been Friday the last few weeks. But inthisveryring.blogspot.com.
All right. After the break, we will be back with the producer of Viva La Lucha's pay-per-view that aired this past Friday and the former executive producer of Wrestling Society X, Kevin Kleinrock, will join us. 888-357-9876, option 1 here on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
But I know it's somebody who think they just gonna come and change things with the swiftness. So get it right with the quickness and let me handle my business. Yo, I'm on a mission and my mission won't stop until I get the one who maxing at the top.
I hope you beat his ass before he drop.
Kingpin kicking back while his record sling is rock. Coming up like a fat rat. Big money, big cars, big bodyguards on his back. So it's difficult to get him.
But I got the hooker with somebody who knows how to get in contact with him.
Hit him like this and like that. Let him know that I'm looking for a big fat dope sack. What is the spin, so let's rush it. If you wanna handle it tonight, we'll discuss it.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage. Brett
Berry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Hogan, the quickest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the host of Stevie Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of Stevie Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of Stevie Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this
show. Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of Stevie Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night, live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the producer of Anything Goes, which you can hear every Thursday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, like most guys, and quite frankly girls out there, probably want to know what's going on through the mind of Cindy Sin. Well, here's a little secret. I have the inside scoop with that connected. And, well, I've been secretly taping her dreams for a while now. So, let's hear what goes on.
Sir Rockin' is the greatest... Rock?
Oh, crap. She woke up. Well, if you really want to find out what her dreams, fantasies, and sexual desires may be, then tune in to Anything Goes right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network every Thursday night. As for me, I guess I'll be there too once I find a way out of this shed she has now locked me in. Cindy, can you please let me out? I'll be good. I promise.
Hang loose, hang ten, high five, go get 'em, fight the good fight.
Hey all, Mace here. Straight shooter, opinionated, unprofessional. For months, we've had Maverick running around saying how he's on college radio, how he's professional, he's giving us free plugs. But you know what? Screw that! If you want to listen to a show that's handcuffed and censored, go listen to his show. If you want to listen to real people with real opinions using real language, then you come listen to us. Wrestle Talk Radio is the place where we might cuss out a storm, but we are always entertaining. So join Spug, Will, Omega, Tim Stein, and myself as we give opinions uncensored every Sunday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now you hear that, Mav? That's real. That's damn real.
Do you have a certain passion? Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment.
Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talku Talk Live, all you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
I'm Al Snow, former WWE superstar, tough enough trainer, and just all around gadabout. When I want to talk or I want to listen to someone else talk, I go to wildtalkradio.com.
This beat is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's so tight. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around. That's right. On time. It's tricky.
AAA 357-9876. Option one is the way to join us in online world of wrestling radio. We want to thank both our Sari and Ari Daigan and Anthony Castellano for joining us here. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, you can go to owwradio.com and find out all the information on how to download our previous interviews with folks such as Hotshot Johnny Devine, Joey Machete of Pro Wrestling Fusion, Lenny Leonard. The previous regime had the legendary Bret the Hitman Hart on. Preview of this Tuesday's show, which, good Lord willing, works out, is, I mentioned, is going to be a ladies' event involving the Wrestling Superstars Uncensored folks, their current heavyweight champion, who, if you go to WSUWrestling.com, you'll see footage of their champion, Mercedes Martinez, getting attacked by fellow WSU star Brittany Savage. Mercedes Martinez will be on our show next week, and her challenger on their show on the 26th, which you can find that all the information at WSUWrestling.com. Alicia will also be joining us next week, so that'll be a ladies' night setup as well. Mace may or not be joining us, depending on whether he wants to be involved in women's wrestling. Just to give you a quick update, Kevin Kleinrock, unfortunately, is like me. He's a parent, and his children are giving him a little bit of an issue and wanting to go to bed right now. So he may or may not be joining us in the next few minutes. I do apologize for that. Nothing you can do. Kids don't want to go to bed. It's not like we can get a tie and put it around their neck and say, "You go to bed now, child." So we're going to do a little transition here. It was a point that I wanted to bring, a story that I had found during my pre-show stuff today that involves Hulk Hogan. Now, there's been stories going around the Spike TV stuff saying, we want Hulk on every single episode of TNA Wrestling. Okay. If Hulk Hogan has his way, Mace, we'll throw it to you in a second. I want to read this. Gentleman by the name of Ben Grossman wrote an article for Broadcasting and Cable that he was told by Hulk Hogan that the Hulkster has been in talks with networks such as A&E, True TV, and Fox Sports. Fox, the regular network, about a new show documenting what he called the resurrection of Hulk Hogan. Now, this is direct from the Hulkster himself, quoted in the article as Terry Bollea. The Hulkster says, quote, to see a brand like Elvis or Madonna, a Hulk Hogan, wow, that's an amazing jump there, just crash and burn and then have so many people want to see me get back on my feet, that's the story that no one has. The story of how he crashed is very well documented, for those not in this nation, including the stuff with his son in a horrible accident with a young gentleman named John Graziano here in Florida, and his marriage self-destructing, and then finding his wife dating someone old enough to be the Hulkster's grandson, and of course his admitted attempted suicide, only to be saved by Layla Ali in a phone call. He has said, as we've noticed watching him on the Spike TV show, he has bounced back saying, things are good, my life is good, I changed my thinking. Instead of hating the world, hating the neighbors, hating everyone, I got away from that craziness I had in my head, I'm just looking forward. So to the folks in the chat room, and then to Mace, and you can join our chat at wildtalkradio.com/chat.php. And we thank all of them for being a part of this event as well. To Mace, is this something you want to watch? I mean, we've got midget wrestling already on Spike TV, and you've got guys fishing in water, and then ice truck drivers, and an exterminator, Who Wants to Sleep with My Grandmother is a reality show. And do we want to see a Hulk Hogan reality show?
First of all, I'd be worried about your grandmother, dude. Then again, your grandmother could be very attractive. We never know. As for another Hulk Hogan reality show, we've been there, done that. Let's move on, seriously. We went from Hogan Knows Best to Brooke Knows Best. So we're still waiting for Nick Knows Best after jail time. And then we finally got Linda Knows Best for Robbing the Cradle. So there's at least two more spin-off shows before we get back to Hogan.
I want to give Mace this point for a second. Rockin' brought this up, but I'm going to throw this back to Mace because this is just wrong. WWEshop.com has just started a Father's Day promotion where you can get 10% off and a free necktie if you spend more than $65. Obviously, it's somebody's Titan Towers have a sense of humor. WWE owns the trademark of Tommy Dreamer? Holy crap. I thought Tommy Dreamer owned Tommy Dreamer. I guess he doesn't. Your thoughts on that, fans in the room, and what are you thinking? Are you like, I can't believe WWE would do this kind of crap?
With the whole thing of the necktie promotion, that's just good laugh. I'm so glad that WWE can at least take something like this instead of being, oh my God, we're serious, we will never mention this ever again. You know, the quote-unquote Chris Benoit protocols that have been put in place since that unfortunate incident, for them to come out and just make it into a joke. Either it's going to add to the whole thing of, oh my God, this is a work, but then again, we've also seen that the WWE shop sort of operates on a different plane of existence than the actual storylines of the WWE. So, yeah, it's just definitely going to be somebody having a really, really good joke. And God bless them. We always need more of a laugh in this day and age. As for Tommy Dreamer's trademark thing, that's going to be, I'd say, Paul Heyman's fault because of the whole ECW buyout. But then again, you've got Tommy Dreamer who was using it in ECW before the WWE acquisition, so it's going to be very iffy on if he's going to be able to use it, because he was using it before ECW was informed, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
all
and
depends
he
on what he was using.
Yeah, and he just used it for Dragon Gate USA in Phoenix over the WrestleMania weekend, and he wrestled for under that name with Evolve, and he's actually wrestling here in Florida this weekend. I think it's either for Vintage Wrestling or I Believe in Wrestling. He's wrestling a guy named Sam Shaw, and they advertised him as Tommy Dreamer. Now, this isn't anything new, because obviously you have Team 3D. So, but then again, who honestly owns the copyright to some of these names? Like, Raven's been Raven since the ECW days. Granted, he was Johnny Polo, he was Scotty Flamingo, Scotty the Body, son. I don't even remember if Spike Dudley ran into this. He ended up becoming Brother Runt. So, I'm glad Rockin brought that up, because that's some hysterical stuff there. The chat room mentioned, Ustream user 17652 says that Tommy Dreamer was using the name in ICW/IWCCW in the early 1990s. Unfortunately, I was not a viewer of ECW back in the day, and I know I get ripped by my friends for that. How could you not watch this? It's classic stuff. Well, sorry, I didn't watch ECW. Put me up against the wall and hit me with Sandman's kendo stick. So, I don't even remember if anyone can bring it up. I don't know if Rock can find it. When did Tommy debut in ECW? Was it in the mid-90s, or is it in the late 90s? When did he debut, Rock? Do you happen to know? Because that's the thing.
I'm sure that Rock can jump on onlineworldofwrestling.com and go and check there, just like
absolutely.
You can find thousands of other profiles on that site.
Yeah, I've got like five windows open at the same time. He debuted in 92, really? Wow.
Yeah, that would have been during the Eastern Championship Wrestling days.
Yeah, because I remember, thanks to the wonderfully produced WWE DVD, he came walking out in those garish-looking suspenders and the big Zuba MC Hammer-like-looking pants, so... It's one of those weird things. Welcome to Copyright Law, brought to you by World Wrestling Entertainment. 888-357-9876, option 1 is the way you can join us here, as we're close to the 11 o'clock Eastern Time hour, and I want to thank all of you for joining us here with myself, Alan Wojcik, and Mace, and Sir Rockin' on the board. Kevin Kleinrock was supposed to join us here, and we're gonna take an unscheduled break, and we're gonna try to get with Kevin and see if he's gonna be able to make it or not. Like I said, he's got some young children in his household that possibly don't want to go to bed. Tommy Dreamer started his career as TD Madison, teaming with GQ Madison as the Madison Brothers? I did not know that. So we're going to take another quick break here. We're going to try to get with Kevin Kleinrock. I do apologize. This is 2 weeks in a row, but welcome to running a live radio show. This isn't a prepackaged event. We're going to let my friend Slick Rick take us out. He's going to tell you a little song, a little story, and we'll hopefully be back with Kevin Kleinrock here on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
There lived a little boy who was misled by another little boy, and this is what he said. Me and you tonight, we're gonna make some cash, robbing old folks and making the dash. They did the job, money came with ease, but one couldn't stop, it's like he had a disease. He robbed another and another, and a sister and a brother. Tried to rob a man who was a DT undercover. The cop grabbed his arm, he started acting erratic. He said,
keep still, boy, no need for static.
Punched him in his belly and he gave him a slap. But little did he know the little boy was strapped. The kid pulled out a gun, he said,
why'd you hit me?
The barrel set straight for the cop's kidney. The cop got scared, the kid he starts to figure,
I'll do years if I pull this trigger.
So he cold dashed and ran around a block. Cop radios into another lady cop. He ran by a tree, there he saw the sister. Shot for the head, he shot back, but he missed her. Looked around good and from expectations, he decided he'd hit for...
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums,
OWW Genesis right now at onlineworldofwrestling.com.
Hey Omega, did you hear that OWW Radio has a new host?
A new host? Really?
Well, yes and no. He's the old host, but he's now the new host. So, on behalf of the Wild Talk Radio Network, I would like to introduce the new host of OWW Radio, Alan Wojnarowski.
No, Mace, you have it wrong. It's Alan Wojnarowski.
Are you sure? I thought it was Alan Wojnarowski.
The name is Alan Wojcik. How many times do I have to spell it out for you people? As these guys are trying to tell you, I'm the host of Online World of Wrestling Radio, which airs on the Wild Talk Radio Network every Tuesday night, around 9-ish, I guess, Eastern Time. Remember, we're on Eastern Time. Till basically, me and whoever's joining me runs out of stuff to say. It's a brand new era in Online World of Wrestling Radio, where your opinion actually matters.
As the owner of Wild Talk Radio, I'd like to welcome Alan Wojcik. Who the fuck is Internet Davis?
The name is Wojcik.
To the Wild Talk Radio Network.
You know my name.
Damn that rock. He hasn't finished his chores yet. Which means I'm taking control of this network, which of course means more country. Anyway, continue listening to all the great programming right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating, but scared to kick reality.
Yo, Dre, you've been doing all this dope producing. You had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Do.
Now I'm living in correctional facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on IQ, because it's steady and funky when you got a subject and a predicate.
888-357-9876, option 1, you asked for it, you streamers, 17652, you got NWA, baby. Old school hip hop night here. I'm a weird 35-year-old dude from New York who lucked out and gets to do what I do on a weekly basis here. And thanks to OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, Brad Dykens, Jason Deadrich for letting me do this every week. This could be you if you want to go to WildTalkRadio.com and tell them I want a show on this network, man. Give me a show. We got some interesting news here. Oh, it's admin@wildtalkradio.com, and don't worry, we'll let loose everything that's going on. And I do want to apologize to everyone in the room, and I know the old regime is loving every second of this, that 2 weeks in a row we've had a situation where a guest was not able to make it, but welcome that person having children. If you don't have kids, you have no idea what I go through on a daily basis and what Kevin's going through right now. I got his voicemail, and then he sent one back really fast to me saying that he's sorry, but let's say he's having issues getting his kids to go to bed, so if you tune in for him, I apologize. Someone in our chat room also brought up the fact we were talking about people owning copyrights and everything. The same Ustreamer that asked for the NWA song brought up Honky Tonk Man. That's a good reference point there. The WWE tried to claim the rights to his name, and Honky had to provide evidence that he had used the gimmick prior to just joining the WWF. I know he came from the Calgary, the Stampede Wrestling Group, where I don't remember, and this would probably be a good time to call Tim Stein up and go, "Help me, Tim Stein Kenobi, you're my only hope."
I don't think he was Honky Tonk Man and Stampede Wrestling. I think he may have worked for them under his real name, which was, his real name is Wayne Ferris, who, of all people, he's related to Jerry the King Lawler. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Rockin' wanted me to say, hey, Corey, Paul London called. Oh, wait, he didn't, so shut up right now. Wow. Okay, thanks, Rockin'. We appreciate that note. Some interesting WWE notes that we didn't get to bring up with Anthony Castellano as our guest with us. And Rockin', if you still have the links to that FCW stuff, if you want to provide it to the kids in the room, I'm sure they would love to dig it. Last night's Monday Night Raw did a 3.4, averaging 4.9 million viewers. That's pretty nice for a go-home show that I guess didn't go right. I also didn't know this fact. Monday Night Raw is going to be coming up on its 900th episode. I know Cole likes to say the longest running episodic show in television history. That's right, Mike, it is. If you want to call wrestling episodic. Apparently their 900th show will take place at the former TD North Garden, or I still call it the Boston Garden, even though that building's been long, long gone. And that's going to be on August 30th, so I think that's a little bit after SummerSlam. The link to Rock's posting in our chat room right now at wildtalkradio.com is to the footage that we mentioned that probably WWE doesn't want you to see. And if they are listening to our show, by the way, love you, Vince. Send money now. That's a link to part one of two videos that showed at the FCW show in Melbourne that Brian Danielson was a part of. Rockin' is saying that he was called Honky Tonk Wayne. That's an interesting one. Apparently an indie wrestler is making a had a tryout tonight and didn't kill anybody at the Impact taping. A young lady by the name of Stephanie Yim, Y-I-M, age 21, had a tryout today working with Taylor Wilde. She has a unique look. She's African-American and Korean. She's been in the business for around 2 years and apparently has a black belt in Taekwondo. So she didn't come out of the, she didn't come out of Team 3D like Rosie Lotta-Love, who someone made a reference to me on Wild Talk, on Wrestle Talk Radio, that she was my, she's my ex-wife. No, but thanks for playing. I didn't want to mention that, but I will mention it. Mace has a little bit of a medical background, so we're going to mention something here that he can possibly explain to us. Mace eloquently killed the WWE's putting John Cena on a stretcher, which even my 8-year-old was watching the replay of that. And she's going, Daddy, they didn't put his neck in the thingy. And I said, right, pretty weird, huh? Tennessee Cowboy James Storm suffered a slight separation of his right shoulder during the Slammiversary pay-per-view and was a part of this week's TV, so it doesn't appear he'll miss any time. Separated shoulder, Mace, are we talking 4 to 6 weeks, or is this he could work through the pain type thing?
We're talking SFA, pretty much, and I'm not going to say the full version of that on the air. He's not really going to miss much time. He'll be sore for a few weeks. As long as he gets the right treatment for it, there's going to be no ring time missed. But being TNA, they've got enough guys on the roster that they can cover these type of small-time injuries just by not having him on TV for a couple
of
weeks.
Will it hurt the real thing? I'm sure a lot of listeners are going, will it stop the drinking?
Oh, hell no. It's James Storm. He was born with a bottle in his hand, goddammit.
Who was it, son? Was it Omega or Will that asked me from covering TNA? He came out on the scooter cooler gimmick, and they're going, Alan, you're friends with him. We want that thing. I'm like, you need
that
to
was myself and Will.
That was you also. That's a funny one. Yeah. Oh, I... Is that legit, Rock? That's a legit story. Just when you thought WWE couldn't get any weirder, as we're entering our 11 o'clock hour, normally we're done by 11, but hey, we're, as it says on our advertisement, we stop talking until, we keep talking until we run out of stuff. This is Online World of Wrestling Radio on the Wild Talk Radio Network. I'm Alan Wojcik, joined by Mace. Sir Rockin' is our producer. 888-357-9876. Option 1 is the way to join us, or you can Skype Sir Rockin'. We do apologize, Kevin Kleinrock of Viva La Lucha was supposed to join us. You can definitely check out his website, VivaLaLucha.com, for information on the replay. I saw this earlier today, and I said, yeah, that's a lot of crap. The next coming weeks on WWE TV, you're going to see, I think it's on the not this Monday, but the Monday after, on the 28th, Rob Zombie is going to guest host. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, Mace. Your favorite and mine TV mom is going to be on. No, I'm not talking about not being clear. Oh, I do have them? Okay, we'll get to them in just 1 second. Believe it or not, Mace, Florence Henderson is going to host Monday Night Raw?
Oh, yay. Let's just hope that they decide to have fun with this one, play up the Brady Bunch thing, lots of bright colors, and I can just imagine Santino now in a blonde wig running out going, Masha, Masha, Masha!
All right, we want to
better yet, Vladimir Kozlov!
Yeah, but we, and Joe Namath is still walking around, so we can have him show up, and Davy Jones can run in and do a bunch of crazy stuff, and then we can go for that little idol and surf and everything. We want to take a moment here and thank very much the gentleman who is joining us now. We apologize for him being a little late, but being a parent, I sympathize with him. He is a former producer of Wrestling Society X and XPW, and is the current executive producer of a pay-per-view series that's going to be on In Demand and other pay-per-view venues. We'd like to welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio, Kevin Kleinrock.
How you doing? Yes, I'm so sorry for being late for you guys. I apologize, but thank you for having me on.
Not a problem. As I said, we had talked before the show through chats and whatnot, and you said, let's try for 10:30 because I'm on the West Coast and I have children. And I immediately went, yeah, I have an 8-year-old and a 19-month-old, and every time trying to get them to bed is like a hostage negotiation in this house. I want to have 10 more minutes of TV, and then I'll go to bed, but can I have a cookie? And I'm like, this isn't the movie Negotiator. You're not Kevin Spacey. Go to bed.
Yeah, for fans, like
that. For fans that aren't aware of who he is, I want you to look him up through Wikipedia and also another company that he's involved with, which is Big Vision Entertainment. They put out a lot of really great DVDs, including the Ghost Hunters TV show on Sci-Fi. This is the company that releases that stuff. You, my friend, have a very interesting wrestling background. Talk about first how you even got involved in the wrestling business and transition it to how you got. Was it XPW that was the first major promotion you were involved with, or was it SSEW? I'm butchering letters. I'm sorry.
But SCCW is a small little Southern California group. I mean, we ran Boys and Girls Clubs in front of a few dozen people. So, and then that parlayed into XPW in kind of a weird sort of way. So, no, XPW definitely was the first major or big thing that that I did, but yeah, I definitely had a an interesting lucky career. I started when I was right before I turned 13 years old. I decided that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in pro wrestling, and it was a weird and different thing, you know. That I don't know. I mean, I guess I never wanted to be a wrestler, so it was kind of weird. I don't know that people at age 13 necessarily decide they want to work behind the scenes in wrestling. Nowadays, maybe, but I don't think, you know, 15, 20 years ago, that was so much the case. But I just knew that I wasn't, you know, I was this scrawny little 12-year-old kid who didn't really like getting hurt, so actually being a wrestler in the ring wasn't right for me. I acknowledged that right away. So I wanted to work behind the scenes. Back then, yeah, I didn't really understand how the business worked. I mean, I knew that it was not all real, but I didn't really understand how the business worked. Sometimes today, I still don't think I understand how the business works. But I wanted to be Jack Tunney. I wanted to be WWF president because he was making the matches, and that's what I wanted to do. And in a roundabout way, I guess that's what I ended up deciding I really wanted to do in terms of writing and booking. But so that was the beginning. And I found a local wrestling company in Los Angeles called Slammers Wrestling Federation, where a lot of the SoCal guys who ended up being in XPW came from. And they had a school, and they ran shows on, I think it was like the first Sunday of every month out of their little school. And so I started attending those shows regularly, and that parlayed into writing for their program and being the timekeeper there and then being the ring announcer and then trying to help them promote and expand some of their shows. And I did that all the way up until I was turning 18 and going off to college. And I went off to college like a whole 20 minutes away from my parents' house. But I decided at that point it was very kind of closed. Slammers is very, very old school, and as much as like there were already the newsletters and the internet was starting to kind of inform people more about what was going on with wrestling, the owner there, Vern, was very, very old school. And as much as I wanted to learn, I was kept in the dark. I wasn't, even though it was timekeeping and ring announcing or whatever, I wasn't allowed in the booking meetings or before the shows to be there in the ring area where they were working out. And I just knew that if I wanted to actually do this for a career, I was going to have to go where I could learn more and have some more hands-on experience. And so when I was in college, it just so happened that a bunch of the guys from Slammers had kind of broken away from Slammers and ended up forming the Southern California Championship Wrestling, which is primarily myself and wrestler Dynamite D, who worked for XPW's Mr. 80s, and Patrick Hernandez, who was an XPW referee. And that's kind of where the whole thing started.
We're going to ask a twofold question. One comes from me, and then one comes from our Wild Talk Radio chat room from Sick Ninja. My question is involving XPW. How did you come to be a part of it, meeting Rob Black and Lizzie Borden? And the gentleman in the chat room wanted to know, how was the overall locker room morale in the promotion during your tenure with the company?
Okay. First one's an easy question. So SCCW, like most indies, was promoted, you know, with zero budget on, you know, grassroots marketing effort. And the best thing that we could do ever was go out to local wrestling shows, especially the WWF was in town, and go pass out flyers for our shows and hope that we would get some of those people to come to our show. And it usually did work. I mean, our best attended shows were always right after we hit up a WWE event. So it just so happened that one of our flyers had ended up in the hands of Rob Black, who was at a WWF event as a fan. Rob had, at that point, been working with Paul Heyman and ECW. Rob had grown up a fan of wrestling, but didn't really know the indie scene. He knew World Class, and he knew WWF and WCW at that time, but he wasn't even aware that there was this whole world of independent wrestling, and that every town across the country pretty much had a Fed. And Rob's family has been in the adult business since, like, the beginning of adults. Rob's father was, like, one of the pioneers of adult. And his brother ran a store in Rochester, and somehow, some way, related to the store or something else in that area, the Dudley Boys ended up doing a signing and met Rob's brother, and then Rob ended up meeting these guys and finding out about ECW. And before I ever met Rob, he had been working with Paul on potentially. Rob had an ownership in that company out in Brazil as well, and there was talk about trying to expand ECW to Brazil. And about also Rob maybe promoting some shows on the West Coast, because ECW had never been like Western Mississippi at that point. So But Rob, so when Rob got the flyer and discovered that somebody else was doing wrestling in Southern California, he was like, well, let me talk to these guys because maybe I can work with these guys if they already know what they're doing. And thankfully, he never actually attended an SCCW show because I think that had he shown up at one and saw how low budget and small we were, he would have walked away laughing.
Oh my God.
But, I mean, honestly, we were supposed to have, there was one that was supposed to happen, and actually, this is at the time that we were just getting things together, and I had been friends with Sheldon Goldberg for a long time, and I don't even remember at this point how Sheldon and I met, but Sheldon was kind of going to consult with Rob and us at the beginning to try to help get us going. And Sheldon's actually the one that named XPW. That X originally was just supposed to be an X for, like, the X Factor. It was never supposed to actually be Extreme Pro Wrestling. That was Sheldon's idea long before the X Division ever came to TNA. And we were supposed to have a show that Sheldon was going to come out to LA for, and Rob was going to attend. And it got canceled due to potential gang violence in the area. We got a call from the Boys and Girls Club saying the cops wanted everything canceled because there was word of gang warfare that was going to go on. And this is like South Central LA. And, thankfully that the show never happened, not just because of gang violence, but I really do think XPW may never have existed, had that show gone off. But we met at a Friday, at a TGI Fridays one night, and I had no idea who Rob Black was, who Tom Byron was, who Gene Ross from AVN Magazine was, but Patrick Hernandez, who was, like I said, one of the main guys for SCCW, he worked for a video supply company, and so he saw AVN Magazine every month and was up to speed on the business, and Dynamite D just being a 30-something-year-old or 20-something at that point, maybe a year-old guy, was well aware of who Tom Byron was, which apparently at that point I had no idea. It was like the second biggest male porn star in the world after like Ron Jeremy. So we went to dinner and talked for hours and hours and hours, and a couple of days later, we left dinner that night with two options. We could continue running SCCW out of the money from Patrick and Darren's pockets, because I was a college kid, I had no money of my own to contribute, and kind of be this local indie that maybe got a little bit bigger, or we could give up what we were doing and team up with somebody who actually seemed like they wanted to fund and try to grow something big. And it wasn't really a hard decision. We went with trying to grow something big. So that's where we met. That's how we met. And then, so I had started, that was like May of 1998. And that summer I started working in the office for Rob, kind of trying to figure out laying the groundwork for this company. But at the time, he was still working with ECW. And it wasn't until ECW got their deal with TNN, and literally there was like a moment, some interview somewhere, somebody talked to Paul, and trying to kind of scoot the whole porn thing under the rug, someone asked Paul about Rob, and Paul's answer was, Rob who? And that was the end of it. I get a call from Rob that day saying, screw Paul Heyman, we're doing this, and screw calling it XPW, just XPW, we're calling this Extreme Pro Wrestling, and, we're going to war. So that was really and that was a year later almost. We didn't run our first show until July 31st, 99. And that's the only date I'll remember, because I have a really bad memory. But I do remember that one, July 31st, 99. And obviously at the beginning of XPW, it really was, how close to ECW can this thing be, but for a West Coast audience? And as we grew both, in time wise and in, I think maturity as writers and bookers and, as different people came in or were involved, it really did become something of its own, and not just an ECW attempted ripoff. But I mean, there's a reason that first Hardcore Homecoming VHS tape never made it onto DVD when everything started going to DVD, is because it really, there are some moments in that thing that are pretty darn embarrassing, in terms of how much Rob really wanted things to be ECW at the time. So, and then the locker room morale, it really depended. I mean, it went through ups and downs and highs and lows, but for a lot of guys, like for the local guys, this was the biggest thing they had ever done. They were getting good paydays and they were getting exposure, and we were on syndicated television to some extent throughout the country. And these guys became local wrestling stars. And also, you know, it was, I know that as much as I'm sure some people talk crap on XPW or on Rob or me or whoever behind our back, it really did become a place where ECW guys liked to go when they left ECW, whether they left on their own or got fired or whatever. And I know that, I mean, for some guys, it was like they didn't even care what they got paid when they came out here. It was like, I get a weekend in L.A., hang out with porn stars, and get to go raid the Extreme Associates library. I mean, literally, like, when New Jack would come out here to wrestle, he probably made a fraction of what he made anywhere else, but he would leave with, like, 100 videotapes being shipped to his house every time. And it was happy.
AAA 357-9876. Option one is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. That number is now sponsored by AJKHost.com. Mesa Wrestle Talk Radio is also here with myself, Alan Wojcik, and our guest, Kevin Kleinrock. And you can go ahead and ask that question, Mace, because unfortunately I was not an ECW viewer, so I don't know if Kevin can answer this question, Mace. Give it a shot.
Oh, yes, I was an ECW viewer through tape trading back when that was the way to get a hold of some of these things down here in Australia. Just one small incident that comes to mind is Heatwave 2000, where there was a small contingency of XPW wrestlers sitting ringside at that ECW event. I'm just wondering, is there any sort of information or knowledge that you have about that event that you'd be able to share with us?
Sure. That was, I'm not a person who, I don't know. I mean, it sounds fun to say that I don't have an ego, because it sounds like you have an ego when you say it. But I'm not a person who's ever really bragged or boasted about anything I've done in this business. I mean, I feel blessed for the experiences I've had. I've done some awesome things that I've been lucky to be able to do. I honestly think that had the roles been reversed and had this been ECW invading legit WWE or WCW, it would have gone down as one of the greatest publicity stunts of all time. But because it was XPW invading ECW and we were like the brash guys that ended up surviving, I guess you could say, when ECW died, It was like, oh my God, this is the worst thing, and so disrespectful. But if ECW had done that to WWE, it would have been like Paul Heyman's God, and it was the coolest thing ever. So we had our big anniversary show, our big 1 year anniversary show, I think it was, coming up at the LA Sports Arena, and here comes ECW getting ready to do their first show ever in Los Angeles. Well, we were going to play the home turf card, and it really came. I don't remember exactly the moment we came up with the idea, but I do remember going to Ticketmaster that morning. Tickets went on sale. I personally stood in line and I bought those tickets for the front row. And we went, okay, we bought the entire front row, and then we bought seats right above the entryway. And there was no plan of, there was never a plan of jumping the rail. There was never a plan of doing anything physical. The plan was to, at the appropriate point, and the plan was just to have XPW t-shirt right there in the front row on the camera. And that was as simple as it was. And, well, when people started showing up at the building, they had actually hired or were using Jazz and St. Clair, and this guy, Doc Marley, who was a local promoter, to basically narc on all the XPW people who showed up at the building. I mentioned before, I'm this, you know, threat to nobody, you know, scrawny, 150-pound guy, and I, for the first time in my life, had a security guy assigned to me. They're literally a guy that followed me around all night and sat behind me when I sat in my seat up in the balcony. And it was kind of crazy. And so Ronnie Lang from Atlas Security, who ended up becoming really good friends with us and ended up doing all the security for XPW and did security for WSX, and I still use him anytime I'm doing a major production. Our guy showed up at the building, and he basically met them and said, look, you guys need to turn your shirts inside out. You know, there's just no way you're not going to be able to have the shirts on camera. And everybody complied. And we, you know, our plan at that point, though, was when the main event happens, simply stand up, turn your shirts around, and have the XPW shirts being shown during the main event. And yes, Christy Mist had like this really small bikini top on, so that when she took her shirt off, you know, it was going to cause some people to stare. But that was it. And obviously, ECW guys were ready and waiting for something or anything to happen, because literally the moment they stood up, the entire locker room cleared. I mean, there was probably 15 guys that ran straight out to that front row and started throwing punches. None of the XPW guys threw a punch until they were punched at. And at that point, though, I had already left the building because we were still going to do this, you know, street team style. And I went out and I met our street team guys, and we got flyers, and we were standing on the street ready to hit everybody that left the building with a flyer for our show when they left. So I'm literally standing on the street corner in L.A. when the doors burst open, and in one of the most, like, surreal moments of my life, there's Paul Heyman in the middle of the pay-per-view, standing on the street, smacking Messiah across the face with, like, just a slap. And it was just like, I'm like, holy, what happened? I had no clue what happened until after. And, I mean, it really was, I mean, people, I think, downplay it. But it was, I mean, really, I mean, do I blame ECW for what they did overall? No. But they were literally beating the crap out of, like, girls and other street team people in the street, like certain guys, like Chili Willie and Big Sal Graziano, were like taking cheap shots at people. But overall, it was what it was, and I think it was awesome. I don't feel bad for a moment. I think had ECW not overreacted, it would never have gone down the way it did. Literally, it was just a matter of turning the shirt inside out. And I know that for years, certain people have held grudges about it. Justin Credible obviously didn't hold a grudge. Him and I have been friends, and we've worked together since then. I believe, Tommy Dreamer held a grudge for a long time. We were about to finally work together, for this first Viva La Lucha pay-per-view. He was originally booked to be on it, but then there were some date changes and venue changes, and we ended up, losing him for that show. But I was looking forward to finally working with him after all these years, But that was the incident. It was really just, an innocent publicity stunt, gone wrong, I guess, when they decided to charge. And I thought it was funny too that, I mean, they were so prepared. I mean, Joey, when you watch it or watch back, Joey Styles went right into, oh, a drunk fan in the audience must have, was acting up or something. And no mention, obviously, of what was really going on. And the cameras cut away. And it was like, that was obviously, a prepared canned response. And then I think the follow-up to that, though, was us taking out a full-page ad in WOW magazine, directly a letter to Paul Heyman about that incident and the lawsuit that they tried to serve us about using Sabu. I did hear from somebody later down the road that it really, really bothered Paul Heyman when he saw that entire full-page ad that had been taken out, writing a letter to him. So it was, but it was fun, and it was different, and it was rebellious, and I think it was a good time.
He's Kevin Kleinrock of the Viva La Lucha pay-per-view series, which can be found on replay. Check your local cable subscriber. Before we go to that pay-per-view, as I mentioned in the intro and we've been mentioning all night, if you bought the DVD set for the first and last season of WrestlingSocietyX.com, this man's voice should sound familiar to you, because he's on there doing something you don't see that often, which is doing commentary in a shoot format, which was pretty wild. For fans that aren't aware of it, take us through the whole process, if there's a simple story of not what went wrong with Wrestling Society X, but talk real quick of how Big Vision and you and this MTV marriage even came to be, if there's a simplified version of that. I'm sure it's one of the best questions you've ever been asked, so if you can simplify it down for us.
All right, here's the deal. When XPW happened, one night, Rancid, the band, showed up at an XPW show as fans. And that was one of the coolest moments of my life, because they were my favorite band. And I saw this immediate connection between punk rock and pro wrestling. So many punk rock guys like pro wrestling. And I had this idea in the back of my head to someday do this punk rock pro wrestling show. So I'm sitting in my office at Big Vision one day, and Houston Curtis, the CEO, who had been a MTV executive, came in and was telling me about this poker show. He was going to go pitch at MTV, Frat House Poker. And I said, hey, you know, by the way, I have an idea sometime down the road, maybe in the future one day, we can go pitch my idea at MTV. And he was like, well, what's your idea? And I told him. And he liked it. And so when he went to go pitch Frat House Poker, we also pitched Wrestling Society X. At that point in time, it wasn't called Wrestling Society X, but it was basically a punk rock pro wrestling idea. And so when you pitch a TV show, you can pitch a show on paper, but usually it's best to have a, what's called a sizzle reel, or like a pitch reel. And most of the time, that reel is something kind of directly related to what your show is. Even if it's not footage from your show, it's kind of a sample. Well, the best thing that we could do to show what we wanted WSX to be was to take a Warped Tour DVD and XPW footage and cut like this crazy 3-minute video of like bands playing and crazy XPW highlights. And that's what we did. And at the time, MTV was looking for shows for guys, because no guys were watching MTV, much like today. And they were looking for, they were actively looking for shows for guys. And in what was one of the luckiest moments or days of my life, because it hasn't happened since then, despite how many pitches I've been in, literally by the time we drove back to the office, which was about 20 minutes away, we had a call saying they wanted to do a pilot. And really the difference between WSX and everything else that's ever been done on TV wrestling-wise is that from day one, WSX was not a wrestling company. It was a television show of wrestling created with a network. But it was incredible. I mean, I remember the moment we're standing in the parking lot and Sam Corkus, who was the other executive producer with Houston on the show, said, you know, they're not going to give us more than 200 for the pilot. And I was like, 200 what? And he was like, 200,000. Now, this is coming from a guy who, for XPW, which was a big-budget indie wrestling show, we spent maybe $30,000 to do a big live event plus tape a month of television. And now somebody's going to put $200,000 behind doing a 30-minute episode of a TV show?
I just nearly spit my water on my laptop when you just said $200,000.
It gets better. It gets better. You know what the pilot ended up costing?
I'm going to put my water down. Go ahead.
$650,000. Do you know how much MTV spent? Do you know how much MTV spent to produce 10 episodes, which really, you know, was 5 hours of footage? $3.5 million.
I own DVDs that cost $3.5 million to make. That's awesome. Holy cow.
And then you sit back and go, well, why the heck would they have just, why didn't they ever even run the last episode? I mean, that wasn't your question. That's totally, you know, why XPW failed, I've covered in a billion interviews. But, yeah, I mean, it was, I'm 27 years old. My dream has been to work in pro wrestling. I was content to be done after XPW. You know, I was 24 at that time. I had done everything I wanted to do. And now a major television network is putting $3.5 million behind an idea of mine. And yeah, it sucks it got canceled. And yeah, you know, I wish it would have gone a little bit differently, but I would do it again tomorrow. You know, to have that experience and to be able to, you know, no one's ever done that before. And I think, I was so lucky to be put in that position. And it goes back to why the commentary is on that DVD. It was like, you know, coming from being a 13-year-old fan who wanted to work in wrestling and who just really wanted to learn about the business, one reason for doing that commentary was to give people an inside look, people that might never get an inside look or might be interested in that. You don't have to watch it with the commentary. You don't need to, you know, see how the magic happens if you don't want to, but I wanted it to be there for people like me who maybe never really were going to work in the business, but were interested. And my other thing is, too, I mean, to me, that's my legacy. That DVD set that you hold in your hand, that to me was probably the best thing and the greatest thing I was ever going to do in the business. And I wanted to have it all in one place where I could, you know, give it to my grandkids and go, you want to know what I did with my life, you know, or what I was doing, you know, for the first half of my life, this is it. And, it was great experience. And I mean, I love that DVD set in terms of just all the stuff we were able to do with it. And it was really fun to put together, from the commentary to all those virtual video cards that we created from the beginning to all the deleted scenes. Like, you know, it was a real experience. I mean, some of the things that got cut out of the show, I mean, other than like any kind of like punches or kicks or setup moves or, you know, selling, which was all the network wanting that stuff cut out. You know, there are other things that got cut out. I mean, we had brought Mickey Knuckles in to be part of the show, and we actually had, moving forward, she was going to be a bigger part. And unfortunately, all of her stuff ended up on the cutting room floor, so we wanted to make sure that stuff got in there. And there were other things that we shot that just either didn't have time or got cut for other reasons. I love that DVD set, and I'm glad that, you know, someone else enjoyed the commentary.
Yep, he's Kevin Kleinrock of Viva La Lucha pay-per-view. We're going to get to that in 1 second. One of my friends that's not listening tonight wanted me to ask this question, and it revolves around a current WWE superstar that you know from Wrestling Society X. Your thoughts on the current Evan Bourne, the former Matt Sydal? What are you thinking when you sit there and go, hey, look, a Wrestling Society X guy on WWE, and he's looking really good?
Yeah. I think it's awesome. I mean, I actually, I live primarily in Phoenix, Arizona now. And, so I actually went to WrestleMania this year. And to me, that was so incredible, going and seeing this guy who absolutely deserves it. I mean, he is a world-class talent. Like, he's just so crisp in everything he does in the ring. You know, there's a lot of guys that can do high, flashy, fancy moves, but they're sloppy when they do it, or they don't always hit their mark. Watching him wrestle, it sounds easy, but it's like beautiful. I mean, he's just so precise with everything he does, and it was great to work with him, and it's so great to see him being there, and especially now over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I haven't really seen much, but I've read and I've heard that Cena's really kind of pushing for him to get a bigger spot. I did happen to catch a minute or two of Raw last night and saw that. I mean, even just, I saw the beginning of Raw last night, and the fact that he was included in that big, okay, we're going to have our biggest stars run in and help fight off the NXT guys. Like, that to me was like, wow. He's like, he's really, not just is he there, but like, he's really getting close to that next level. And I think it's incredible. I mean, he was great to work with. We almost didn't work with him though. I mean, there was a few moments leading into the pilot where, Delirious and Matt Sydal were both pulled from the pilot because they were going to go sign TNA contracts. And, long story short, in the end, Delirious decided not to, work with us and to go sign a potential TNA deal. And Matt, I think a lot of it maybe had to do with Vampiro, who he had just been on tour of Europe with, kind of convincing him. But I think hopefully, I mean, we're blessed that we had him, and I think hopefully he realized it was the right career decision for him. So I think it was great. It was great to work with him, and I'm really proud to see him, where he is now, and he absolutely deserves it. You know, a guy who never bitched or moaned or anything, and, you know, went out there night after night and just delivered.
How did this project come about? Because I'm the person, through getting DVDs through Big Vision and also going to a couple NWA events, I have a pretty decent relationship with an associate of yours named David Marquez. And when I first saw this, I messaged David and said, so you're going, they're going the Lucha way. And he says, that's not me. I was like, really? He said, no. I got so much NWA stuff on my plate. This is Kevin's baby. What's the genesis of Viva La Lucha? And how did the, I believe they're called G-Funk Sports and Entertainment. How did that group get involved with you as well?
Okay, well, David is one of my best friends, one of my closest producing partners. We've worked on a number of projects throughout the years, and including, you know, we made a real honest attempt to do NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood and shot some pilots, and we're not giving up. He's not giving up, I'm not giving up. The NWA, as it exists now, under Dave's kind of production, deserves a shot at television, and hopefully we'll be there someday. I know that he just started working with the Metro Pro Wrestling out in Missouri, and I think that their first TV taping I heard went really well, so I'm best of luck. And I mean, Dave and I still talk probably every other day, but... So the genesis of this, and I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, when Big Vision started, or when I first came to Big Vision, the very first thing that I did wrestling DVD-related was a series called Desperados del Ring, which was footage from Lucha shows that Conan had promoted back in the 90s, early matches of Rey Mysterio Jr. and Juventud Guerrera and Halloween and Damien back when he was still Master of Ultraman, and he had all this footage. And nobody had ever released a Lucha DVD. And so our idea was, let's be the first ones. And let's make it really, really special. Let's only do it in Spanish. And let's put them out there and see how they do. So Conan came up to L.A. to do commentary on them. And a friend of his, Ruben Zamora, drove with him up to L.A. And that's when I met Ruben. And Ruben and I kind of instantly kind of hit it off in terms of just kind of being on the same page about wrestling and Lucha. And Ruben had actually started, he had trained at Rey Mysterio Sr. School and TJ, but then kind of being an American and being kind of business-minded, he ended up becoming like the booker for, in terms of like if you wanted to book Rey Mysterio Sr. and Psychosis and a bunch of the other like TJ guys, if you wanted to book them for the U.S., you called Ruben or they told you to call Ruben, et cetera, et cetera. So I met Ruben then, and we decided that we wanted to put together a Lucha tour. We were going to do the first kind of national U.S. Lucha tour. And at the time, the NWA was just starting to sell their arena shows that they were doing with a guy named Chris McNeil out of Las Vegas. And so I had gone and I sat down with Chris and I had presented this tour idea to him. And that was right before the WSX project started coming together. Well, WSX kind of came together, and so we put Lucha Tour on the back burner. And in the meantime, Chris started to sell NWA shows with Lucha guys on top, seeing that he was getting really good reactions from the buyers at the arenas and stuff for Lucha. So that's when NWA started doing all their shows with Lucha on top throughout the country. And so WSX happened, and that, I mean, literally, like, not to jump back to the WSX story, but we pitched in the summer of 2005. We did the pilot in November of 2006, my point being was it took about a year and a half even to go from selling the show to getting it on air. So there was a while there where that was all I did with my life. And so now fast forward to about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Ruben had started a company called Masked Republic. And at first, Masked Republic was just doing gear for guys. They were doing the gear for Conan and for Psychosis and for Sean Waltman and started to do gear for indie guys in the U.S., like a bunch of the guys that worked for Revolucha out of Detroit. Started doing gear for Delirious and some of the Ring of Honor and Chikara guys. And him and I started talking again, and, you know, no one has ever merchandised Lucha right in the U.S. I mean, even from WCW days to, you know, no one's ever merchandised it right. And when you see a mask on the street or in a store, it's not officially licensed. You know, you see a Santo mask or a Blue Demon mask, you know they're not getting a piece of that. It's just, you know, people are manufacturing them and selling them. And so Ruben started going to the Lucha guys and saying, hey, how about signing with Masked Republic to represent you for licensing and merchandising in the United States and throughout the world. We're not going to mess with your business in Mexico. Mexico is Mexico. But if we can make progress and make some deals for you to take advantage of the character you've created, why not? So a number of guys started signing. A lot of the old-time legends like Solar and Super Astro and then, you know, current kind of name guys like Rey Mysterio Sr. and Hijo de Rey Mysterio and L.A. Park. And so Ruben was building a business, not just about making gear. And about that time, we started talking again, and he ended up in the position to pitch a Mexican wrestling pay-per-view series. Now, G-Funk had been the pay-per-view link for Ring of Honor, And then after Ring of Honor, Ken Gelman over there at Defunct started representing Dragon Gate for their pay-per-views. And so an introduction was made between Ken and Ruben, and Ken took the idea out to the cable companies and pay-per-view providers. And they immediately took to it. I think even Ken was surprised at how interested they were, because really when you look at the amount of Hispanics in the U.S., the amount of disposable income that they have, and the entertainment options that they're given specifically for, like, the Hispanic world, it doesn't really even the amount of entertainment options that the, you know, average Caucasian American is given for their dollars. And so other than boxing on pay-per-view, there really aren't Hispanic-targeted pay-per-view events. And so they were like, this is a great idea. And the idea from the beginning was it would be done in English and in Spanish, and it would be shot in high definition. And nobody's ever done HD Lucha. AAA just did it for the AAA Mania shoot in Mexico, but nobody's ever broadcast outside of Mexico in HD for Lucha. So it seemed like it was a relatively easy sell for Ken. And as soon as that kind of got put together, Ruben asked me to be the executive producer for that and come in and work on it with him. And really since then, a lot of my time has been dedicated to helping Ruben build Master Public pay-per-view series and kind of the whole business overall with a number of other projects that are coming up. But it was a great opportunity to do a Lucha pay-per-view. And I don't know if you've seen it or haven't seen it yet, but really the whole philosophy behind the series is keeping traditional Lucha for the Hispanic community and giving them the stars and giving them wrestling either direct from Mexico or their stars here in the U.S., but delivering it in a little bit more of an American wrestling style and also making it easily accessible for American traditional pro wrestling fans who maybe like watching AAA or CMLL, but, you know, it's kind of hard to watch when you don't follow the language sometimes. And I think a lot of people, you know, same thing of, like, commentary versus no commentary. It's one thing to watch a wrestling match with no commentary, but just listening to commentary kind of pulls you in a little bit more, even if it's not the greatest commentator in the world. It makes it easier to follow sometimes, and it makes it more enjoyable to kind of be reminded sometimes of the story points and stuff like that. So our philosophy going into this was, let's keep it real for both sides, and let's not force the wrestlers who don't speak very good English to cut promos in English and have to cut generic bad promos. Let them cut a promo in Spanish and we'll subtitle it. Or let the or for somebody watching in Spanish, let the Americans cut their promos in English and we'll subtitle that. And so when you watch the show, it's really a blend of English and Spanish and subtitles and you know, your language commentary, whatever language they're watching it in, and a really unique experience, and especially like this first pay-per-view really does kind of have a little bit of something for all different types of fans. There's two matches on there that are really good, solid wrestling matches. There's a couple matches on there that they're going to appeal to the hardcore fan base, the guys that like more violent wrestling. And then there's a couple other matches that are just good, solid wrestling matches that are really there to tell stories and bring us to pay-per-view number two. So in a way, this is kind of the first pay-per-view series that's being done by guys that are still, I still consider myself a fan of the business. I don't think that you can be a successful promoter, booker, writer, whatever, if you don't like the business that you're working in. And so, I mean, we're really looking for feedback because, like, one of the matches we did on the show was TJ Perkins versus Mr. Aguila. To me, that was kind of like an independent dream match where you had a guy who's a great, phenomenal worker from the United States who's working this great worker from Mexico who was in the WWF when he was 19 years old and really was bringing that lucha style to WWF before Ray Jr. was. And doing this pay-per-view series, we're able to go, let's put these two together. And I really would like for every episode of the pay-per-view series to have at least one kind of dream match that the internet wrestling fan can go, hey, I'd love to see so-and-so versus so-and-so. And obviously, you know, it has to be reasonable. We can't pull guys from TNA or places. But, you know, great independent Americans against great independent Mexicans in matches that have never been seen before. And I think our first experiment with TJ versus Mr. Aguilar really worked. And I'm looking forward to being able to kind of repeat that model over and over. So there was your way long answer.
How did you guys, some of the legends on this show, I mean, you've got obviously the Mexican fans are going to love seeing some of these names. So you mentioned Halloween and you mentioned Damien's on here. How did you get L.A. Park and Sabu? And what's been the react? Was that like a dream match that you and the Mexican wrestling community and just wrestling in general wanted to see? Or was this just like L.A. Park going to you going, I want to work him?
Well, actually, that's the one match. Well, there's two matches on the pay-per-view that weren't shot in Mexico City as part of the Pedro del Mal show. That's the basis for this pay-per-view. That's one of the matches. That match actually happened right before we shot the rest of the stuff for a promotion called X-Law. X-Law is pretty much like the XPW of Mexico. They're they're an independent group that runs about once a month or so, and they're a little bit more hardcore. And the LA Park that American wrestling fans pretty much know is the LA Park who was La Parca in WCW. He's a guy who had some pretty cool high flying moves for a big guy. But he was the comedian. He danced, and he had the chair, and he was the chairman of WCW, and that was the LA Park of old. But over the last couple of years, he's really started to pride himself, and this isn't like storyline. This is like shoot. Like he's really started to pride himself on becoming like the most hardcore wrestler in Mexico, and so he is the X-Law heavyweight champion. And really, what X-Law has been doing is bringing in a number of hardcore wrestlers from outside the country to face him. Like right before this match happened, he wrestled Sandman. And I think eventually he's supposed to be wrestling Tommy Dreamer. This was a great opportunity. What a better match to try to appeal to an audience of both Lucha fans and non-Lucha fans that might be interested in buying a pay-per-view than having LA Park versus Sabu. So we made a deal with the X-Law promotion basically for the rights to that match. And we're able to put that on the pay-per-view. It was great because, I've known Sabu throughout the years. You know, he was your XPW champion. He was with us for a long time. It's no secret that he's gone, through a number of health issues and problems kind of dealing with, from injuries and various having to recuperate from those injuries. But, I think Sabu is back. I mean, both in terms of my phone conversations I've had with him and then seeing him wrestle. He's in a great place right now, and I was really excited to be able to put this match on there. And I think if you're a fan of Sabu, you're going to like seeing this.
For fans that want to see this, I know on your Facebook page, and you can friend him, look up Kevin Kleinrock. Am I wrong in saying that this wasn't on like every provider known out there? Was there like an issue of anyone? I think I heard some. There was an issue with either DirecTV or Dish Network. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's not. It's on. Basically, if you have cable in the United States or some form of cable, you can get it because In Demand and TVN, who provide to like 98% of the country, picked it up. And on satellite, and actually, and Dish picked it up at the very last minute. Dish picked it up just a couple weeks before it was going to start airing. And then in Canada, we're on Viewer's Choice and Bell, and I think that we'll be adding another system up there probably for the next one. But we aren't on DirecTV. Part of the thing is it's just the business of satellite programming. With cable, you have a lot more, with digital cable, there are a lot more channels that you can provide to homes. But with satellite, there's a strict number of channels that the satellite can provide without going out of their way to spend more money to broadcast something. And so DirecTV is pickier about what they'll take. You kind of, on the business side of things too, DirecTV often, the deal is that if you don't make a minimum number of buys, you actually have to pay them to have carried your pay-per-view. It's one of those things where, or it broadcasts that you don't see any money from it because you haven't met your minimums. So it really, at this point, didn't really make sense to push DirecTV to take it. We'd love to be on DirecTV, and my hope is that by the time the numbers are in after the whole month of replays, You know, we have no idea right now, nor will we probably for quite some time, how it's doing so far. But, you know, we're doing everything we can to spread the word and hoping that, you know, word of mouth will continue over the next month as the replays happen. I'm hopeful that it will produce well enough that DirecTV will decide that it's worth picking up and making it a regular offering as we move forward. Our contract right now is for six, so every other month. Basically, you know, as we mentioned, G-Funk before, basically it alternates Dragon Gate and Viva La Lucha every other month on pay-per-view. So that's we're hoping to build and build, and that someday it will be on DirecTV. And at the same time, we're going to be working on expanding and making it available in foreign countries as well, other than Canada.
Before I let you go, I got to bring up Big Vision Entertainment, who have put out some amazing DVDs outside of wrestling, such as the Ghost Hunters TV show, and you are the guys that put out the wonderful, I'm blanking on the name of them, the interviews they did with the Hardys, with Wade Keller, and then you also have Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara. How did you guys come to be a part of Rob Van Dam's setup? Was that something that Rob approached you guys with, or did you guys say, "Hey, Rob, we've got a neat little DVD thing here. You want to make some money?"
You know, I'm blanking on how it exactly came together. Rob and our company have had many. I do remember how it came together. Rob and our company have had mutual friends throughout the years, and you know, this was kind of a mutual, both sides approaching each other, and we had talked to him about a number of different projects, and but this was something that was already in the can and completed. And unfortunately, between the downfall of the DVD business at retail over the last year and the some major hits that Big Vision took because of the company at the time that was our main DVD distribution to retail company, that kind of walked away or screwed Big Vision for in the neighborhood of $2 million. Unfortunately, a lot of the DVDs, between that and between just the DVD business right now is screwed. It's just totally screwed. Because what happened is, as people stopped buying DVDs and as stores like Tower and Musicland chains went out of business, they stiffed distributors for money, distributors stiffed studios like Big Vision for money, and just, unless you are a major label like a Sony or a Disney or someone, it's become very hard to make money in the DVD business. And, you know, at this point, it's really, I mean, Big Vision has hardly put anything out, over the last year or so because of that. And it's one of the reasons, too, that I've kind of stepped away, and while I'm still associated with Big Vision, you know, I now have my own production company, called Worldwide Personified, that I'm kind of running all of my different projects, including the Master Public stuff and some other television projects that I have in the works through, but, you know, still in contact, with Big Vision as we work on some other projects together. But, you know, unfortunately, because of the way the DVD business had gone, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Best Buy, if it said Big Vision, it was on the shelf. Didn't matter what it was. We had developed that kind of relationship with them. And then as shelf space for DVDs started shrinking, and as people start shrinking shelf space, it's that special interest sports section that always loses shelf space first. And so then it became, well, we're going to pick and choose what titles we put on the shelf. Which, you know, at that point was still okay. We were still getting our best titles on the shelf. But then in January of 2009, they basically said, if something's not going to sell 1,000 units a week, we can't carry it anymore. And there's really not a lot of independent wrestling titles that that are going to sell 1,000 units a week. I mean, at first, the WSX set did. The Hardy Boys, you know, set sold really well for us. And there's some other titles at first. The Pro Wrestling Guerrilla DVD sold really well at first. But sold and us receiving money became two very different things. Like, that Pro Wrestling Guerrilla set that we released was on par to do about 1,000 units a week at Best Buy in that first month. But then, because of business things, we never saw any of that money, and therefore, High Spots and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla never really saw any of that money. And it really just became like, what's the point of putting out DVDs if nobody's going to be financially gaining from them. I know that really wasn't your question, but that was one of the things that happened with the RVD DVD, was it wasn't going to move 1,000 units a week, and so a lot of places just didn't take it, even though I think that had they put it on the shelf, it would have moved. And just because of other financial end things, the money just never really trickled. And it sucks. It sucks. I really like Rob as a person, I wish that it would have gone differently at retail. I'm glad to see that. It was a very cool, unique product. And if you haven't seen it, you should at least go to the RVD TV website and watch some of his stuff or buy it directly from him for sure.
On that note, as we're approaching midnight Eastern on the East Coast, I'm going to say thank you very much for joining us here, Kevin Kleinrock. The website, I believe, is vivalalucha.com. Do you have a date yet set for the second? I know you said it's Dragon Gate and then La Lucha. Is there a date set for the next La Lucha pay-per-view?
We will be back at the end of August with our second pay-per-view. And like I said before, I mean, there are definitely, if you're going to get into the series, now's a good time to do it. I mean, the pay-per-views are only $20, and there are multiple matches for the second pay-per-view that are set up on this first pay-per-view. So not the hard sell, but order the first one when you see the replay. It does replay all month, and on some systems all the way into the end of July. So check it out, and you can go to VivaLaLucha.com for the 12-minute preview. And actually, also up in Canada, if you're in Canada and you get the Fight Network, they're playing our 12-minute preview this week a number of times. So you can check out the Fight Network or check out my status right now on Facebook for what time it's going to be airing on the Fight Network.
All right. Kevin Kleinrock has joined us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Thanks for coming on. And even though it was a little late, I still, as a parent, I'm appreciative that you even got here because I know kids are real fun.
Yes, I appreciate it. I thank my daughter for allowing me to finally come on, and I thank you for the time. It was fun.
All right, take care. On that note, before we play out our music, I want to take some time to thank everyone that listened here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. You can go to clickwrestle.com. There will be a new commercial for them in the works here. The previous regime had one, but we don't like to use their voices anymore, so we won't. This is the part, I'm going to do this without music rock, I'm going to pimp. If you liked what you heard here and you want to listen to more wrestling, Mav and Nick, I believe their names are, have a show on this network called Running the Ropes. It's on Fridays at 6 p.m. Eastern. This week on Sunday night at 11 p.m. after Fatal 4-Way, Wrestle Talk Radio with Tim Stein, Spug, Mace, Will, Omega, and this week, yeah, I'm going to sit in with them again. If you're a geek and you want to talk some geek stuff with Mace, Spug, and Omega, it's called Utaku Talk Live. They're on this network tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. The very lovely and talented Cindy Sin of CindySin.com, SYNDYSYNN.com, hosts a show on this network with Sir Rockin, and I may or may not be there this week, depends on how much pressure Cindy puts on me to show up. Her show is called Anything Goes, and of course, Sir Rockin joins Rob Parks, Saturday nights, midnight-ish, on this network for CB Radio. I want to thank Kevin Kleinrock for joining us. I want to thank our guests from Anthony Castellano joining us, Sarah and Ari Dygan joining us, everyone in the WTR chat room and on onlineworldofwrestling.com. Wow, 3 hours again, kids. I swear I'm going to get the show in under 2 hours at some point. Next week, ladies' night. You could start my public enemy. Ladies' night, WSU heavyweight champion. I don't think I can call her heavyweight champion. Mercedes Martinez will be here, the number one contender to the WSU championship. Miss Alicia will be here. We're going to try to get some more contributors. OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. I'm Alan Wojcik. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm going to let Chuck D play us out. I'm